there.
Economist Robert Denk with the National Association of Home Builders. Details are sketchy over the situation in Algeria, where hostages, including Americans, were taken when Islamic militants took over a natural gas plant. There is a report that all of the hostages have been killed, and there is a report that some of them survived. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta was asked what the U.S. is doing about it.
Obviously, we're going to look at what the situation is, how best to address it, how can we bring our military assets to bear in order to deal with it, and also basically talk with the other countries that are involved.
The incident was an act of terrorism. Some states taking aim at President Obama's plan to reduce gun violence. Several states are rebelling against any new federal gun limits. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott.
What we're prepared to do is to ensure that constitutional guarantees are not stripped away because of political overreaction.
Texas and Missouri are talking about making it a felony to enforce a weapons ban. Sheriffs in Kentucky and Oregon vow to ignore new federal rules. And Huffman continues to White House. The Dreamliner is becoming more of a nightmare. Just a Boeing.
The Dreamliner in the world has now been grounded. United is the only U.S. carrier to fly it. Its sticks are now sitting empty in airports while Boeing tries to figure out a fix. It's a serious safety problem. Revolutionize flying. High-tech, lightweight Boeing is proclaimed to be the future of aviation.
This is ABC.
In a wrong world.
And you heard? Proactive is America's top action system because it's fast and gentle, and it's all about prevention. So stay tuned for a chance to participate in a 60-day trial to prove it. Do you have trouble skin, acne? With Proactive, you can heal your acne and help prevent new breakouts. Right now, in this radio area, we're looking for just 50 people with moderate acne to demonstrate exactly how fast Proactive works. The first 50 callers to qualify to try Proactive risk-free for 60 days. And you get our dermatologist clean skin or risk-free guarantee. Plus, the trial includes our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer, plus free shipping. Be one of the 50 lucky people to complete this 60-day risk-free trial. You won't see this offer in stores or on TV. It's a radio exclusive. Supplies are limited and free shipping ends soon. Visit GetProactive.com or call 1-800-721-0568. That's 1-800-721-0568. We haven't won the war yet, but the latest on the show, we're making it. You can be the answer definitely.
p.m. now for your free copy of the Gold Dot at 800-479-2177. That's 800-479-2177. Are you tired of stressing out about the economy? Ready to take control of your retirement fund? American Bullion has a precise, tax-free, and hassle-free system. First or existing IRA or former 401k into a gold IRA. That's why they're the leader in gold IRA rollovers. It's all spelled out in a free American Bullion Gold Guide that answers all of the questions in plain and simple English. Call for your free copy today at 800-479-2177. That's 800-479-2177. American Bullion. 800-479-2177.
You're not going to win over it. That's the end of the story. What are we doing there? Why should we sacrifice one more human life?
We brought democracy to Iraq.
What democracy?
We brought nothing. All we did was throw out the Sunni and put in the Shia, creating a Shia presence from Iran to the Euphrates, all because of George Dumbo Bush and his foreign policy misadvisors.
Youngstown's home for Michael Savage on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
The only way America can be saved is by understanding that the entitlement mentality and the largesse of the state proposed by Harry Reid, Obama, and the entire pack of Democrat socialists, the only way we can survive is by reigning in entitlements.
Youngstown's home for Michael Savage on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. Hope you're having a good day today. I'm in studio with Mark Mangi at 7 minutes after the hour of 12 noon here on the 17th of January 2013. And I can't believe the month is moving so fast, so rapidly.
Yeah, I'm over here looking up my calendar, and I thought, whoa, this is the third Thursday in January, the third Thursday of the month, which means I get to go have an afternoon with my good friend Tracy. And
I always look forward to having you on. You know what I hear? I hear people say, I like when Mark Mangi's on. I love his conversation. I like to hear what he has to say. He has a different thought process.
They have a talk to my wife.
No.
She'll tell you about my thought process.
Listen, you have one. You know, when you look up the word wife, and I say this with so much respect, because I think somehow we have lost the attitude, how important mom and wife, what that means.
Sure.
And when I look at your wife, I see a woman who is a wife, who is a mom. And it is one of the greatest occupations and or, I'm going to say occupation that a person could have, is to be mom and wife. And I don't think we respect that position as much as we should anymore.
I don't think we respect parents as much as we should. She makes a mean pot roast. She gave me the best pot roast I ever had last night for dinner. It was just outstanding.
Listen, your wife can cook. That's what I'm saying. Your wife can cook. She's crafty. She can bake. She cleans. She's organized. I mean, I don't know what you did, but, you know, God likes you.
I got to figure it out. I still haven't figured it out. 40 years, I still haven't figured
it
out.
And she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's a beautiful woman. She's
well kept.
She's always looked good in clothes. Just like I go shopping with her. You know, I go shopping with my wife.
Yeah.
And we go into the ladies' clothing stores love to see me when I come in because I'm always selling stuff for my wife and for the shops. You know, that's going to be I'm going to come back and work in a lady clothing store.
I don't know. You just become a lady stylist.
Well, you know, you want women to look pretty.
Why is that we don't want to look pretty? Because you notice today, a lot of us, we don't want to look pretty. We want to look like men.
Well, you saw what happened with that flap with Miss Alabama.
No,
the football
I missed
game.
That.
They were showing the Alabama, I think it was the Alabama-Notre Dame game, and ESPN focused in on the quarterback for Alabama's girlfriend. and Brent Musburger made the mistake of saying she's a beautiful woman. And everybody went bonkers, and he had to apologize the next day for saying she's a beautiful woman. Dude, she's a beautiful woman. She's a beautiful, beautiful girl.
Why can't you say that?
Yeah, they don't want you to say that.
Well, I don't understand.
And Miss Alabama, to her credit, came out and said, if anybody wants to say I'm a beautiful woman, I'm more than happy to have them tell me that. I mean, she's a beauty contestant. Now she's got a gig on ESPN going into the Super Bowl as a result of that.
And, it worked.
It worked.
Now, I heard about the young man who had the girlfriend who was non-existent that didn't die.
Oh, what was that? That's Notre Dame.
That was Notre Dame.
First of all, the guy's a Mormon going to Notre Dame. Now, I've got to figure that one out. You know, I had to thought how that happened. You know? But, you know, he claims, you know, I've read a couple different stories about that, and, the bottom line, this guy was, he was up for the Heisman Trophy, and I think they were doing some campaigning. I mean, they gave a Newt Rockne story where they said that, you know, his grandmother died, and then within 12 hours his girlfriend died,
right.
And her dying wish was he go out and win the game.
And he won the game.
And he won the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it turns out she didn't exist.
Right.
His father said he went out to Hawaii to meet her. How could he do that if she didn't exist? I this is going to be a lot coming out on this story.
I just don't understand. And this is what gets me. And this is what – help me out, Mark. And see, tonight it made local news. Oprah's on a whole other channel. She's no longer syndicated on local TV, broadcast television. She's a cable network now.
Yes.
During the morning show, our local news reporter says, and tonight on OWN, Lance Armstrong, is that his name?
Yeah.
He's going to be on Oprah Winfrey on the OWN show.
Yes.
To talk about doping.
Yes.
We got this football. I turn on MSNBC, and they're talking about this news program, and they're talking about this football player from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And I'm going, but the world is going down the toilet in the crapper.
Yes.
And we are now talking about cycling and Tour de France and a dead girlfriend who doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it is a talk of the day.
Yep.
When we have our freedoms being eroded, we have now commingled taxes and health care. We've got all these acronyms controlling lives.
Right.
And the top of the headlines today is some dead girl who didn't exist and a bicycler who we live strong and bought a whole bunch of yellow bands was doping.
That says something for the country, doesn't it? We're obsessed with celebrity. We're obsessed with status. We're obsessed with stuff that doesn't count. I don't know if some of the stuff that's going on is so awful nobody wants to deal with it, or maybe it's beyond understanding. It's so complicated and so focused on things in their life that they feel they have some control over. But
I mean, just think about this. Yesterday, the President of the United States had a press conference and wrote some executive orders. That blew a lot of people's minds.
Yep.
And the headlines this morning on morning talk shows were Lance Armstrong and Notre Dame football guy who had a girlfriend who didn't exist that died, but she lives, and we don't know where she is. Did his grandma die?
Yeah, his grandma really died.
Okay. Well, maybe he was so distraught that he got confused.
No, I don't think he was confused. He's goofy. They're all goofy. I think their heads get rattled when they get hit on the field too much. Maybe he wasn't wearing his helmet or something. I don't know.
I'm just looking at this, and I'm going, we got this acronym soup that we won't pay attention to, but this, and I guess maybe it's easier.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm serious, Mark. Maybe it's easier. He's handing me his, yeah, I'm checking her out.
Oh,
he
you're
is,
looking at her. Isn't
she is beautiful.
Beautiful woman.
No, you can't say that, Mark.
Sorry.
she's a girl.
Yeah, she's a girl.
But going back to what I was saying about that, why is it that we, as women, don't want to be beautiful anymore?
We have been so brainwashed to the point of what we expect rules are supposed to be according to whomever, the uber feminists, that, you know, that you know, it's everything's gone screwy. We've lost common sense. When are people going to stop listening to these folks and say, you know what, I want to look good, I want to work hard, I want to be a good father, I want to be a good mother, I want to get dressed up, I want to make myself look good. What's going on in this country? We've turned into a bunch of slobs.
We are slobs. We don't dress up for anything.
Amorphic slobs. I don't understand.
But look at the beauty industry is a multi-billion dollar business. We spend billions on magazines, makeup, cologne, and clothes.
And if they can tell me where the people are that are wearing that stuff, let me know.
I don't know.
Because
I don't
see it.
So I don't understand. What are we really doing here? Because if you really look at women, we dress like men now.
Yeah.
You can't find dresses anymore.
Right.
And if there are dresses, you might as well not put on the bottom half of the dress.
Right.
Because we leave nothing to the imagination.
Now, my Aunt Josephine said you could see all the way to Poughkeepsie.
That's what I'm saying. We don't, young ladies, we don't teach them how to wear slips. You know, it used to be you have a slip on. You see, oh, yeah. Was it called Poughkeepsie?
Right. Poughkeepsie.
Poughkeepsie. Yeah, you can see Poughkeepsie. Yeah, you see it all. You're not allowed to. We wear cologne, but you're not allowed to tell us we smell nice. Because what they say to this is how it goes.
Yeah.
I don't want to offend you, but you really smell nice.
Well, but if you don't want to be told, listen. If you don't want to be told you smell nice, don't put on the perfume. If you don't want to be told you look nice,
If you don't want to smell nice, if you don't want to be told you don't smell nice, put on a deodorant and a perfume anyhow.
There.
No. Because don't tell people that. Some people need to put on the cologne, the deodorant, the aftershave, and the shave. Brute, whatever it is, cologne, perfume, they got to have it. Don't tell them because you offend other people then.
Why do I offend other people?
Not you. But people that don't wear cologne, they can be offended. No, you need to wear cologne. Cologne is important.
Well, yeah, I don't wear men's cologne. On the other hand, I use a half a stick of deodorant every morning.
No problem.
Like tissue.
That's okay. Deodorant is good. I think it's good. Very, very good.
I think so too.
Because some people don't use it, and we need it. FYI, you need it.
Hygiene.
They don't teach that anymore.
They don't teach. They used to teach hygiene in gym.
Yeah.
Used to teach hygiene in home ec.
No,
they don't teach that anymore. Everybody wants to go. And you know what? I'm going to tell something else, and everybody can get mad at me all they want. Women, ladies, put on some hose. They don't wear hose anymore. I got to tell you, the leg is not the most attractive part of the body. Hose going to hide the varicosities. You know, and all those little imperfections you see.
So do hoes make a difference?
I think hoes make a big difference.
I never thought about that. I wear hoes still, but, hoes are expensive. I think that's why we put them down.
Well, I've never worn them.
I'm telling you, hoes, because see, some hoes can enhance and some hoes can hinder.
Yeah.
And so there's a difference between hoses.
Right.
Hoes that enhance, they're expensive, especially, and they run.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't know. I never knew men paid attention to women not wearing hose.
Well, I think so. Well, I don't understand what they think, and I see it. You know, you see it on television. I look. You know, I watch Fox News in the morning, and Gretchen Carlson is a former Miss America.
Okay.
On Fox and Friends, and she wears a dress every day, basically a sundress, and no hose. Well, they wanted to do some exercises yesterday, and they were doing deep squats. And she had on a dress with no hose. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know if I really want to see that. I got to give her credit. She did it like a lady. I don't know how you do deep squats on a dress without hose and look like a lady, but she pulled it off. And but, you know, put on some hose. It makes you look good.
It makes you polished.
Yes.
It's amazing that you put that up. Because we women are getting away from hose completely.
Yeah.
But we're getting away from, I look at, you know, women in the morning when they're on the morning shows. I don't understand the sundress in the wintertime.
No.
It doesn't make sense.
And no.
And I know that, you know, President Obama, Michelle Obama came out and she became sleeveless.
Right.
Because at one time, you dare not go anywhere as a lady sleeveless.
Yes.
You always had to have a jacket on. Now sleeveless is the new trend. But not everybody has the arms for sleeveless.
Yeah.
But I think a turtleneck or appropriate seasonal wear it should be common, not just wearing.
Yeah, I'm sitting there watching them. They got New York in the background, and they're getting 10 inches of snow, and she's sitting there in a yellow sundress. I don't get it. You know, they show off a lot of skin, I suppose.
Why?
And the other thing is it's hot in there under the lights.
But, okay, but I don't see the men taking off their clothes.
No, they don't. Thank God.
But see, that's what I don't understand. Even when I watch television, when I watch movies, you see more naked women than you do naked women. I mean, seriously, if all things being equal, since we're going to have this, you know, why is that?
I don't know. Men put on their shirts and ties and jackets and sit there. It's got to be hot with them sitting in a wool suit under the lights. You know, for me, it's an issue because when I do my singing, we're under spotlights and I perspire like a horse, you know, and
I get hot. It's hot.
And my shirt gets drenched and you know, that's just the way it goes. But
we don't do that anymore. I mean, it has become so taboo for ladies to be ladies, for us to aspire to be wives, for us to dress like a lady.
Look nice. I look at people walking into some of these places and I think, my God, didn't they look in the mirror before they left? The human body, just basically speaking, is not an attractive thing to see. There are attractive people who've got, you know, really super bodies, are able to pull it off, but the vast majority of us don't.
Very few.
You know, and so I like to wear things that cover up where I need to be covered up, and or blousy where they're a little blousy, because I got a little bit of a gut, but I got a lot of a gut. You know, you got to take care of yourself. You don't have to put on a tuxedo, but my God, if you're going out for dinner, men, get rid of the tank top and put on a shirt. You know, women, put on some clothes.
Pull your pants up.
The sweats.
Does that make a difference?
I mean, yes.
Because, you know, women get married, or we cohabitate with men, and we don't. A friend of mine said we dress up for the mall, but we don't dress up for our home.
One of the shows I like watching is What Not to Wear on television. It's one of my favorite shows. And, you know, here they can take a good, if you have a good stylist or somebody that's able to tell you how to dress, I don't care. You can look good. It takes a little bit of effort, but you can look good. And, you know, they take these women who are, you know, frumpy and haven't washed their hair in 10 years, and last tube of lipstick they bought was 1952, and they make them look good. And it can be done. It just takes a little bit of effort.
But we need to go back and teach it to our young people. I mean, because if you look at our young girls, they either look like little hookers or little mini thugs. There's no medium. You don't see a young lady dressing for success often.
Listen, long gone are the days where grandma would tell the granddaughter, if you're not advertising, don't dress like
it. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. Mark Mangi and I are sitting here in the studio, and we've got a pretty much of an open mic today. I do want to talk about the executive orders on yesterday, the NRA. I do want him to talk about some of the legalities of mixing the health care with your taxes. I am not comfortable in my gut.
The IRS will be sitting at your door.
You know, because that means if you're not taxed, what happens when you haven't paid your taxes or you haven't filed your taxes and you need health care?
Yeah.
And because the assessment of the penalty for you not having health care, and it's almost like insurance, somehow they're going to have to make this mechanism of how you're going to prove that you have health care, because health care is now a mandate that everyone must have health care.
And it's enforceable by the Internal Revenue Service.
And I'm losing this.
They've hired thousands of new agents to come in and enforce this.
Thousands of new agents?
Thousands of new agents. Thousands. You're not talking 100 or 200, just thousands of agents.
So how are they going to enforce this? And I don't know if anyone knows, but the IRS really has not always been the warm, fuzzy people that we think they are.
You know, we have to be proud here in the Mahoning Valley.
Okay.
That and somebody, you know, if I'm sure there's people that are going to throw stuff at the radio when I say what I'm going to say.
But he did a good job.
He did a great job trafficking, knew how to handle the IRS. And
he did a good
job in making sure that rights are protected. And we have backtracked from that a little bit. And that's because we don't have Jimbo in Congress telling them what to do.
You know, I have to say this, and for those of you who do not know, Jim Trafficant was a Democrat congressman that was in Congress preceding our current congressman, Tim Ryan.
And my cousin.
Well, he is.
He's
really
my cousin, yeah.
I have to say, I miss Jim. I miss Jim from being in office because Jim, I think things would go differently if he had been there because he would have been a senior now. He would have been a senior ranking member.
He would have. You know what? He would have been a senior ranking member, but I doubt very much if they would have given him a position of authority because they didn't like him in Washington.
They didn't have to like him. They respected him.
Yeah. Well, he got what he wanted.
That's what. And he had a way of coming to the well and making things known.
You know, and he did a lot for this area. If they don't give him credit for it.
Nobody
wants to claim it. If you look at Covelli Center, if you look at the 7-Eleven connector, if you look at the courthouses downtown, a lot of federal money came into this area.
And it was not program money.
No, he did a good job for us. And you know, I don't know what he did or didn't do.
And getting into that,
I don't want to get into that. But you know, he did for the area, and to just throw him under the bus and pretend like what he did didn't count as wrong.
Can't do that. But then we'll come back. I'll ask the question after I take the call. Hey, Styx, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to say something about the healthcare thing real quick. Most people know our daughter just graduated college. We had to prove that she had coverage before we could take her off of our policy. We had to send documentation to the insurance company when we removed her. We couldn't just take her off.
How old is your daughter?
23.
Okay. So she could stay on your policy till when?
26?
26, I guess, is what the law is now.
Yeah.
But she was in college. That's kind of my thing with the whole thing. As long as your kid was in college, as far as I know, every insurance company covered them until they were 25 or 26.
Right.
That's if they were in college. Now they extended it even if they're not in college. But my question,
if they're not in college, they should have a job and they should have their own insurance.
Yeah, but now I'm talking to insurance, to employers, and they're saying they're dropping people. They're removing health care because the rates are going up so high.
Ours just doubled our deductible, and they doubled our deductible on copays, and the premium went up. And my daughter, with her insurance, it just went up. Between the tax increases and the health care thing, she just took an 8% pay cut.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure. People don't understand it. You know, that nothing's free. And it's the amount of I have a general point of view that by the end of 2015, this country is going to see massive unemployment like we haven't seen in years. It's going to make the recession that we're currently sort of out of, but not really, look like a walk in the park. I just don't think the nation can withstand the shock that's coming from this, and it's going to affect people directly, and the people who it's supposed to help are the ones it's going to hurt.
How is it that people cannot see that whether you like the administration or not, just because you like the administration does not mean you cannot engage the administration for what you need. See, I don't have to. I can love you to death, but I can criticize you to make you do what I want you to do, Mark.
Sure.
So if I tell you if you want to be on my show and you can't never wear that purple sweater again,
this is plum. It's not purple.
Okay. Tomato.
I got a plum tie too, but I didn't wear it.
I don't know why not. But I mean, if you come to my show and I say no purples allowed, only red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
You know, you're my friend, but I made a ruling.
Yeah.
You and Jeff and Styx can get together and say we're wearing purple, and I can be outvoted. So why is it that we can't get people to engage in this process to make things
to where it, because yes, we needed to deal with healthcare. That I will give you that. We America needed to deal with healthcare and accessibility. They did. America needs to deal with guns.
Right.
They do. And violence. They do. But it's not for me to dictate the way we're going right now and think it's going to be okay, because what we're really doing is we're hurting the people who do right.
People, in all seriousness, that health care, when they were passing it, when you have a president of the United States who looks into the camera and lies to the public about what it does, anybody who could pick up that thing and read it, and you didn't have to read all 2,000 pages of it, there were subheadings. You had to find what you were interested in and look at the first paragraph. Anybody that took the time to do it would know that this man, when he got on TV and looked at people and said, if you have your health care, you can keep your health care, was a bold, dead, outright, plain, old-fashioned lie. He's a liar. And I just, and as long as you've got people who people trust lying to you, you're not going to look and try to figure out what's going on. But now, like Nancy Pelosi said, you have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. Now we're going to find out what's in it, and people aren't going to like what they see.
But look at what you said. You've got to pass the bill to find out what's in it. That's what she said. I remember that very, very clearly. But now Harry Reid put the NRA in the health bill.
Yeah.
Half of Congress had no idea that it was in there.
Yeah.
Which means they didn't read it before they passed it.
They didn't have any time.
So why would you pass something and not read it?
Because you have somebody bashing you on the head saying pass it. I have to watch how I can tell you what I think it is, and I'll tell you off the air what
okay.
it is. You know, that what this was for these people. But the reality hasn't set in. I don't think, practically speaking, they're going to be able to enforce it, and you're going to see large portions of it repeal it because it can't be done. The logistics of doing what they want to do can't be done. It's impossible to do. My God, my son has a student loan.
Right.
They have changed the entity that handles these student loans, I think, twice since he had the student loan. They changed it. He made payment one, payment two, payment three to the new entity. Nothing was posted. He was doing direct deposit from the bank, so we know that they got the money. I called these people up on the phone. He gave up. I mean, I said, well, you got two choices. You know, you sue them or you try making one more effort. We came to the office and we sat down and we talked about it. I got this babe on the phone from Oklahoma who couldn't shut up. I was on the phone. Alex and I were on the phone with this woman for an hour. And she kept talking but not saying anything. What part of, here's the account number it came from, here's the account number it went to, here's who it was made payable to, where's the money? And she didn't want to talk about that. She wanted to talk about something else. It was one of the most frustrating conversations I ever had. And I'm thinking to myself, these are the people who want to take care of our health care.
Now hold on. And this is my, now I want to slow down on what you just said. The number is 347-945-5229. I'm going to make a comment, then I'm going to take a break, and then I'll bring some calls up. Now, you are a educated legal person.
I'm an attorney, one quarter short with a master's degree in Russian history. I'm not a stupid person.
But you're a lawyer who deals with litigation, who deals with negotiation, and who deals with law on an ongoing
daily basis.
Okay. Now let's come back to your son has his master's in accounting.
Right. He's a CPA.
Now let's go to the simple person who, you know, I have a liberal arts degree.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this huge debt, and I'm just getting out of school, and I've been out my 6 months, and I'm trying to pay my loan.
Right.
Who helps me?
Pondalone. That's an Italian expression. Who's going to pay? Pondalone. He's a mythical Italian character. He was a clown, kind of like Bozo. And so when the Italians say, who's going to help me? Who's going to pay for me?
Pondalone.
Pondalone.
So do you know how the recourse of people, when I look at I look in the eyes of older people when they have to go through some things with the insurance company
yeah.
and with their credit cards and with
Medicare.
Medicare. when I look at what they go through,
horrible.
It is an atrocity that we allow that to happen. And now we're going to attach everyone's health care to a bureaucracy.
Yep, that's what's going
to
happen.
I'll be right back. Stanley, I'll pick you up on the other side of my break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. We'll see you on the other side of our break.
Fit family, unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you, with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for, with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingley Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingley offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingley, it's not clean. Kingley Hand Wash and Wax, 309 West Midlothian Boulevard.
Are you satisfied with your current level of reproductive health care? Have you been considering making a change? Dr. Hill and Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley are accepting new patients. Call 330-746-7007 for comprehensive female care that includes fertility treatment, contraception management, and prenatal care through delivery. Dr. Hill and Associates in Women's Health of Mahoning Valley provide individualized, personalized care in a soothing, first-class environment. Call 330-746-7007. Most insurances accepted.
Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795. Do you depend on your computer? Then you know that a virus on your computer is bad news. But there is something you can do. Just call this number, 330-759-9700. That's 330-759-9700. That's the number for Ambassador Technologies in Liberty Township. Ambassador Technologies specializes in virus removal and restores your computer to full performance. We also specialize in computer repair, from desktops, laptops, laptop screens, laptop power supplies, laptop batteries, and hardware updates. And when your business needs networking, Ambassador Technologies is the place to go. Ambassador Technologies, Youngstown's best for computer repair, networking, website development, and even low-cost business cards and publishing. Call Ambassador Technologies at 330-759-9700. Online at ambastech.com. That's A-M-B-A-S-S. WSOMTEK.com.
I'm Mark Lavoie, WSOM News. An Austin Town mother will spend 52 days in jail after officers went to her home last week and found her attacking a 16-year-old boy surrounded by 13 other teenagers, two of which planned to fight in her garage. 34-year-old Patsy Lomax Higgins received her sentence yesterday. She pleaded guilty to one count of assault and one count of violence. The state is kicking off the first of five regional sessions to train Ohio educators to respond to school shooting situations. More than 200 people registered for the first sessions, which are set for Columbus. Ohio's elections chief has directed county boards of elections to set up a process to review allegations of voter fraud and suppression in the past election. Secretary of State John Husted ordered boards yesterday to hold public hearings whenever a complaint of voter fraud or suppression that's supported by evidence is filed. You're up to date. I'm Mark Lavoie, WSOM News.
If you have a parent entering a nursing home, are the executor of an estate, or just need a will, this message is for you. The Law Office of J.M. Shade is able to help you make the right choices to ensure that you and your family are protected. Call us toll-free, 866-606-6187. Again, 866-606-6187. Or see our site for more information at jmselderlaw.com. JMSElderLaw.com, estate planning made simple.
Are you satisfied with your current level of reproductive health care? Have you been considering making a change? Dr. Hill and Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley are accepting new patients. Call 330-746-7007 for comprehensive female care that includes fertility treatment, contraception management, and prenatal care through delivery. Dr. Hill and Associates in Women's Health of Mahoning Valley provide individualized, personalized care in a soothing, first-class environment. Call 330-746-7007. Most insurances accepted.
We're back with Tracy and Friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM. 347-945-5229. Or toll-free 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at TracyAndFriends.com or 600WSOM.com. Now, here's Tracy.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends. It's 1243 here on WSOM AM 600. And I'm sitting in studio with me, Attorney Mark Mangi, and it is always a pleasure to have him with me.
And she's teaching me all sorts of stuff during the break over here that I didn't know.
What did I teach you?
Well, about this health care thing and guns.
Well, yeah, you got to have guns. Guns are important. Guns and health care. We got to mix them together.
Yeah, I joined the NRA yesterday. I'm so proud.
And why? They're an elitist group of racist people who want guns, and they fight against the freedoms of Americans.
I know. It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bob Schieffer said we're Nazis.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just checking.
I don't know if I was a Nazi. I don't know. half the country must be Nazis now.
Yeah. They're more than 47%. And the number is 347-945-5229. Stanley, go ahead.
I am very proud of our president, extremely proud. You know
no
how
joke.
Much change he did in 4 years?
Yeah, I know.
So I'm extremely proud of what he did. I'm extremely proud of what he did yesterday. He didn't go against the Second Amendment. He did what a lot of people agree that he should have done. And I'm sorry to say, I trust, and I want to make one point. If we would have basically asking all the states, not just every state, and saying, do you agree of what he did yesterday, trust me not, you would be surprised if a lot of people would say we do. A lot more than they don't. Trust me.
Okay.
So that tells you what direction that this country wants to go. That tells you what direction. And same thing with healthcare. So that tells you there's a lot of things that people don't agree with what you're saying, Tracy.
Family, sweetheart. I know. A lot of people disagree with what I'm saying, but let me explain something. I've got to trivialize this so that everyone understands. There's a lot of things that my parents said to me when I was younger that I adamantly disagreed with. I said they didn't understand. They don't understand what I need to do with my life. They're too old. They're too out of touch. And they need to leave me alone and let me do what I choose. And I found out, as I've gotten older now and I have matured, that
there was a lot of things that my parents said to me that they were absolutely right about. And when I say that blending your health care with your taxes is a bad thing, trust me when I say this, it's going to be a bad thing. When I tell you that dealing with the Second Amendment and dealing with these things and through executive order, it's a bad way to go about it. It is. Because, and as I said to you yesterday, whether you agree or disagree, the precedent that is being set by this president is going to come back and slap us in the future, even if it's not President Obama that does
it. But Tracy, what happened if it doesn't slap us? What happened if you're wrong?
Like, I'm not wrong.
Like back in the days when a lot of people said when Clinton decided to do what he needed to do, like get the rich to pay a little bit more, went from 37% to 39%.
He was wrong.
And every Republican was crazy. It's going to be the end of the world. Who was right?
He was wrong. And hold on. So let's
go
back.
Right?
To, let's
Who
go. To,
right?
Let's go back. Hold on. Let's go
right.
back to Clinton. Hold on.
Was wrong.
Hold on. Let's
Who
go back
right?
to Clinton. Let's go back to Clinton if you want to go back to the Clinton years. The Telecommunications Act destroyed journalism in America, and so did it. And it, all it did was make Mob Bell bigger, stronger, and badder. The NAFTA and GATT agreements that were signed during the Clinton administration were so half-hearted and not round in the law that we are feeling the effects of a bad import and export, as well as global exchange, than we should not have felt. Now, Mark may disagree, but when I look at manufacturing in America, America is becoming like the black community. It manufactures absolutely nothing. When you don't make anything and you leave out your ingenuity, you lose. And right now, we pay farmers to not farm so we can buy food off the coast, which doesn't make sense to me. Our trade agreements, what China sells comes in here and imports, and what we export, and the tariffs that they pay and the tariffs that we pay, it should be a law against it. It's against the law. It's wrong. It's a bad deal. But we don't want to talk about that. And I'm saying I don't care whether it was Clinton, whether it was Obama, I don't care who it was. It was bad law. Because the American people today are feeling the effects of a bad trade agreement that was actually produced under the Clinton administration. And Mark is older than me, so he may understand more of this.
No, I
but
I don't.
Tracy, that was not the question
Hold on, Stanley.
I asked. That was not
Hold
the question
on.
I asked.
You did. What I'm saying is, even when you look at the tax, the what Clinton.
Okay, do you remember
listen,
what the, do you remember
listen,
that
time
Clinton,
when Clinton
listen,
you asked me the question, Stanley.
Okay, I'm asking you.
Under the Clinton, Stanley, under the
you
cannot talk and me talk at the same time. It doesn't work.
Go ahead.
Under the Clinton administration, we had a great economic boom, but more of the boom came from the technology aspect than it did from. And coming out of Reagan than it did coming out of Clinton.
But Tracy,
you
got to
understand.
Point.
You
Whoa,
don't,
Tracy,
Stanley.
That's not my
Stanley,
point.
Listen to what
that's
I'm saying. You listen to what I'm saying. You do not feel the effects of a current president until he's actually gone.
I can't believe what you're saying, Tracy. When somebody is wrong, Tracy, don't you say that they're wrong?
Did you hear what I said?
Cover up what they do.
Did you hear what I said?
No,
I said
they were wrong.
I said you don't. I said you don't feel the effects of a current president until after they're gone.
Okay. So
don't. So you can't listen. So the boom, the economic boom that you had under Clinton actually came from Reagan. It didn't come from Clinton.
What do you want me to say?
The same. Hold on. The same way the first 3 years, President Obama, he actually blamed Bush. Because he said he did not incur it. Remember that? Or am I missing something?
But that was not what I was talking about, Tracy. I was talking about what Newt Gingrich said during that time when Clinton decided to basically have the rich get taxed more. That's what
I
was talking about.
And what I said to you is it was not a good idea. I answered that question.
Republican said it was going to be the end of the world. It was going to be a second depression. It was going to be losing jobs.
Stanley, it was not a.
You
it was not a good idea.
How come you can't say you believe in truth? Truth happens in both ways.
Stanley, I can't give you the right. I can't give you the answer that you want.
Were they right or were they wrong? Was it
they
true?
Were,
was it
I
not?
Said that, Stanley. I said they were wrong. Go ahead.
Thank
go ahead, Mark.
Thank you.
I would you kind of clarify for me the point he's trying to make? I'm having a hard time. I'm kind of fading in and out on my earphones over here. Is he? What's Stanley? What are you trying to tell me?
Back in the day, when Newt Gingrich was basically the person that responsible for the House, when Clinton decided to basically change the tax from 37% to 39%, you go back to videos and everything because we have the history. Every Republican was saying it was the end of the world. Same thing as now. Every Republican was saying it was going to be depression, it was going to lose jobs, it was going to do this, it was going to do that. We have history to say which one is right, which one is wrong. Republicans were wrong.
All right, I understand. See, I understand what you're saying. Let's talk about why when they raised the 37% to 39% back when Gingrich was Speaker of the House and blah, blah, and that sort of thing. You got to understand that when Clinton was president, the boom that this country experienced was because of the increase in productivity resulting from technology, the digital age. And he was the beneficiary. American productivity went through the roof. Anything that they would have done with the tax code one way or the other would have paled in comparison to the increase in productivity in the nation, which just was skyrocketed and created all sorts of wealth for all sorts of people. On the other hand, a lot of that was phony wealth, and it came crashing down.
Because that was when we started day trading.
Yeah, if you take a look, you know, and I started trading back then. If you looked at American Online, I bought it at 2, it went up to 130, fell back to 2. And, you know, they bought Time Warner. There was a lot of mergers and acquisitions. There's a lot of money floating around because of the productivity boom. And it just didn't work. It's different today. We have a different problem today. The problem today is the government has borrowed a ton of money. They've tried to shove it into the economy. They're taxing the people who are producing the jobs. And if you look at some of these taxes, how they affect people, you know, sure, it's going to affect some of the uber wealthy if you're going to look at the people like John Kerry, John Edwards, the Kennedys, Barbara Streisand, to make a few of people who it would affect. Mostly it's going to affect people who hire other people. Because the way the tax code works, it's going to affect small businessmen. It's going to affect small manufacturers. It's going to hit what was basically the middle class of the manufacturing sector of our economy. The uber rich can afford to pay it. I don't think anybody's going to dispute that. You know, the problem is the way it's structured. It's going to affect the people that are creating the jobs. You if you go and you tax yachts, people aren't with an excise tax, people aren't going to buy yachts, and they ended up rescinding the excise tax on boats because it killed the boat industry. Taxes have consequences, and particularly in this day and age where there's no money, nobody has any money. So this is a real scary time. And the effects of what's happened, I agree with Tracy, aren't going to be seen for another couple of years down the road, because it takes a while for all this stuff to percolate through. The amount of money that this last tax increase raises, the debt's $16 trillion. What are you going to do with the $16 trillion after that gets the money? It doesn't affect it one bit. Not one bit.
And when I said that each administration, you usually see it in the next, you're going to see the blowback of Obama. In 2015, I know. Hold on. You're going to see it in 2016. Mm-hmm. No, 20. Let me see. 2016, 2017, 2018.
We're going to start 2015.
When they try to implement this, and it really starts getting into your pocketbook, as did the $40 that they talked about last year that everybody's screaming about this year. You saw it leave your check.
I'm just going to say one other thing, and I've learned because I'm a stock trader, and I've learned in looking at this stuff, if you ever hear anybody say this time it's different, run for the hills, because it's never different. We're going to get the double whammy coming down the pike. You're going to get the whammy of higher taxes, and it's going to affect everybody. At the end of the day, it's the middle class that pays the tax, not the rich guys. And we can talk about that later on. But because it's always the middle class that pays the taxes. Rich people can hire accountants to get it, to take care of it. And the Federal Reserve has pumped so much money into the economy that sooner or later the inflation is going to hit, and it's going to hit in ways that you can't possibly imagine. And you're going to be right back to the Carter days, high interest rates and massive inflation and high unemployment. This is where this – because it happens every time, every single time.
But
and if they say this time it's different, it's
not
different.
Hold on, Stanley, hold on. Go ahead, Matt, you're on.
Hey, guys. You know, with politics and the way things happen in America, it's hard to get rough the cause and effect of policy, because it takes a long time through time for policy to kick in. And a lot of administrations tend to make their policy not go into effect until into their second term or later on, so that they can't be blamed or their particular political affiliation can't be blamed for what's going to happen down the line. I think that's a big cause of why we have these arguments, because really, as you said, Tracy, you know, usually one administration's decisions during their administration doesn't happen until the next or a couple administrations down the line. That's when you start seeing the effects. And it's really mind-boggling to me that people will put aside their common sense and actually look at the policy and try to figure out in their head, common sense, why these things happen. And I think that, like Stanley, I dig Stan. We talk, you know, quite a bit. I listen to it, and some of his arguments are good, but it's really mind-boggling to me that people put aside that common sense and don't realize that, you know, when you really think about it, sometimes some of these decisions just don't make sense.
Last time I was on the show, we talked a little bit about this, and I'm going to bring it up again. Here's what's going to happen beginning in 2014, and why we're going to see major effects going into 2015. In 2014, everybody's going to have health care coverage. If you don't have it, you're going to have to buy it. And the IRS is going to come in to enforce it to make sure that you buy it. Now, at the same time, employers who employ more than 50 people are going to be forced to offer certain types of policies. The government has mandated what goes into those policies. The cost of those policies is going through the roof right now because the amount that they're covering is going up. In addition, people are going to be coming in with prior conditions, which are going to also cost the cost of insurance to go up. Now, these employers have two choices. Some of these employers, when you get some of the General Motors people and that sort of thing, the cost of these policies per family, you're talking upwards up to $10,000 a year. Now, GMs and these big companies that are Obama's favorites, you know, have exemptions. They're not going to have to comply with the act. But the rest of us schmucks out there in the real world are going to have to comply with it. So if the employer's looking at his budget going into 2014 and 2015 saying, I could pay the government a $2,000 fine and not have to have health care, or I could pay $4,000 for the policy, what do you think the employer is going to do? He's going to tell his employees, I'm going to pay the government $2,000. Here's an additional $1,000 to go buy your own. I'm going to save myself $1,000 on the policy. Sayonara, go buy your own policy.
Absolutely.
And that's what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, people who are used to getting a non-taxed benefit are now going to be having to pay out of pocket for an insurance policy with after-tax dollars. Mm-hmm. Now, the way that the Health Care Act is set up, there's supposed to be some tax credits or reimbursements that go back to the individual who has to buy his policy. Let me tell you, there's no way in hell that whatever you get from the government is going to cover the cost of the policy. And when that hits the economy, and it's going to hit it in a major way, you're going to see this economy tank because it can't withstand the shock. And you're going to have the IRS standing outside your door making sure that you do it. This is scary stuff, and people don't understand it. And the only way they understand it is to go through it. And then they're going to say, oh, well, nobody told me that. Well, we've been telling you that. It can't work.
I Mark, you articulated that so very well. I'm going to take my break. You really, because I'll be right back. The number 347-945-5210. That was very, very well articulated, because everybody's scared of the IRS, and you just put your health in their hands.
Up into the, we're taken hostage at.
Hey, Matt. Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, this is Matt too. I'll just listen.
Hey, how are you, Matt too?
Hey, pretty good, man.
You see the they're all saying that the end of the, they're making so many assumptions. They're saying that they know more than President Obama, that must have sit
yeah.
down with experts that said what's going to happen
you know,
to healthcare. All of them were crazy, and this
and
guy
when
knows
you know,
more
and
than everybody knows.
Now that's strange. That's strange. Yeah, that's strange you would say that, man, because when the guy was talking, one of the things that I was thinking about were two things. One, first of all, the people who think that a bad decision is a bad decision, in most cases, are not the interest group who's pushing the policy, right?
Yeah.
That's the first thing, because the people who pushing it, of course, they think it's a good idea. Now, but the other thing goes to what you just said. When I heard him talking, and it sounded very intelligent, but here's what you got to understand. Whatever policy a president pushes, the expertise and the – now, we're not talking about whether we agree with the decisions or not, but the expertise and the professionals that they have at their disposal to put these things together that look 20 and 30 and 50 years down the road, basically what you're saying is, all of them are cuckoo, and you're not.
Exactly.
And
that doesn't make sense. People who study those things,
right.
People that said, like I'm telling them, I mean,
all of these institutes, you know how many institutes and
exactly.
stuff they use that studies for years and years and years before they go with a policy?
It's
all
like,
these
like
institutions,
the
all these institutes are wrong,
her.
These research institutes, all them
exactly.
wrong, all the experts, all the interest groups that go into it, all them wrong. And it's going to be doomsday after.
Exactly. It's like what I said today. I said to Tracy, back in the day, Clinton had a choice. Clinton decided to basically tax the rich a little bit more, from 37% to 39%. And the Republicans said, and I quote, all Republicans said the same thing we're hearing now. It's going to be the end of the world. We're going to lose jobs.
Yeah.
We're going to lose our country. This is not patriotic. You could go through the whole list. Now, my mama always told me something. When it comes to that, one of the two is going to be right, and one is
right.
going to be wrong.
right.
Okay?
Right.
I don't care what it is. I don't care.
Right.
If Republican would have been right, I would say, hey, Republican were right.
Right.
You know how much I had to tell Tracy which one was wrong, Tracy? We can't go that way. Tracy. Which one was right? Which one was wrong? Let's go through history. One is right, one is wrong. Through history, we will know. Clinton was right. We didn't lose jobs. And then they're going to come and say, well, because you had information technology and this and that. I don't care. It's either right or wrong.
Well, and that's the other thing. I think, I don't know, a lot of times political decisions, I wouldn't necessarily classify political decisions as right and wrong, only because of this. What you have to understand is when you're in a capitalist system like this, any policy that gets passed, it's not going to be good for everybody.
Of course.
Yeah. Some are going to, you know, there's going to be some who are on the side of the policy that's going to say, hey, man, this wasn't good for me. But then you're going to have people on the other side of the party say, hey, man, right on, this worked for me. So what happens is the people who say it worked for them, they say, hey, man, that was the right policy. And the people who it didn't work for, they say, hey, man, that was the wrong policy. You see? And that's basically what you hear.
And
very
I
few policies do everybody say, hey, man, this worked for all of us. Very
exactly.
few ever passed that say that.
And it will never happen. And like the
right.
policy that the president did, and he did 23 executive order because he believed that he didn't do with the gun. I said to I dare any Americans to basically have a national vote and ask, are you happy with what President Obama did? And trust me not, you will lose, Republicans. You will.
Hello?
Go ahead.
There, I think there is a little naivete with you, Stanley, in that you believe that the policies that the presidents are passing, he's passing them because he believes in them. Now, I think you're very naive when it comes to that.
Maybe
that's
I am.
Opinion.
Maybe I'm very naive
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
But
because
look
you can walk the policies back, man, and you can – any policy's got footprints, man. Just walk it back. Walk it back through the interest groups. Walk the history of it back, and you'll see why they get passed. They don't – it ain't just falling out – you know what I'm saying? He didn't go to sleep and with, you know, with the Tooth Fairy visit him and said, hey, I think I'll get up and work on this policy. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I'm sure that there was something behind it and everything, but
right.
we need – but we had a gun control. He's the only president that did two things that no president ever did something. Guns
no, that's true.
And healthcare.
That's true.
And everybody's jumping on him like it's the evil thing. And I'm looking at Republicans saying, when you were president, you never talked about those issues at all.
Right. Yeah. Well, and they weren't going to talk about it because that wasn't their interest.
No. No Republican
yeah.
ever said, no, I mean, you're George Bush. Reagan said, you know what, we have a healthcare problem. We need to resolve this. We need to do something. But
well,
you're going to jump on the first person who does something?
That's a little untrue. There have been Republicans that they've always
president.
Brought.
President.
There have been presidents that have brought it up as a problem. They haven't really acted on it. Healthcare is a very touchy situation. Now, in
right.
my view, Stanley, in my view, healthcare got so expensive and such a problem because...
Hope you're having a good day today. Hold on, guys. Again, the number is 347-945-5229. In studio with me is Mark Mangi. And, again, you're listening to us on WSOM AM 600. If you want to call locally, the number is 330-781-9600. We were talking about healthcare, and it's an ongoing conversation because it's tax season. And I'll tell you how I really brought this up and so that you guys can know what sparked my interest in this a little again, like it's nothing new. H&R Block has a commercial out right now. And they have this young lady saying, I read all 1,700 pages and it took me a week to read it. And when you come to the H&R Block office, I will help you with your health care choices and how to deal with this in a tax manner so that you will have a better understanding of your taxes. And I'm going, So I got the H&R Block lady talking to me about health care while she does my W-2s.
Just kind of a hoot.
You've seen the commercial.
I've seen the commercial, too, the H&R Block.
That's right. I'm convinced that I need to go find this lady. But my problem is the IRS lady, or the lady who helps me with my taxes, now needs to understand health care law.
There's a direct relation. There's a tie-in. The amount of deductions you can take for health care off of your income tax, and that has been that is being affected by what's going on in Washington right now, but both with the health care which goes into effect full strength next year, and also the how the deductions work this year for 2013 on the deductions you can take and the amount of deductions you can take, and that's going to make a difference to an ample number of people who I'm not a tax guy. I don't even do my own taxes because it scares me. But from what I've seen on television, read in the papers, it's going to make a difference to a fair amount of people on what they can deduct for their out-of-pocket health care costs. It's going down. You're not going to be able to do it as much.
I have a problem. That's still – I don't like the connection.
You don't like?
The connection.
The connection. No.
I don't like the connection.
I don't think the IRS likes the connection. They've said repeatedly they don't want to be involved in this. But, you know.
But to get it done and for it to be a mandate, it had to be a tax.
Yeah. That's scary stuff.
Yes, Stanley. Hold on. 269.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, how you doing?
Bless
this
you.
Year?
Oh, pretty
can
good.
You say to her what we just talked about this thing? Because I want you to say exactly what we said. Because you
well,
made a perfect.
I was talking to Stanley. I was listening to the gentleman who was giving that explanation.
Yeah.
And the thing that came to me was, you know, two things about policy. One, about calling them right or wrong. Normally, you just have interest on either side of the policy. And the ones who the policy hurts, they're normally the ones who say, hey, man, this policy is full of crap, and it's wrong. And the ones who the policy helps, you'll normally hear them saying, hey, man, right on, this was a good policy. It is correct. That's the one thing. The second thing, when these policies get passed, the gentleman was giving his explanation, but do you know how many research institutes and all of these think tanks and the professionals and the experts that are behind any policy, whether they come from the left or the right, the number of hours that's put into it determining and looking down the road 20 and 30 years. Now, we're not talking about whether they're right or wrong again. But so for somebody to say, one person to say, hey, man, this policy is full of crap, and you got all of these people putting in all these hours. I mean, basically what you're saying is all of them are wrong and I'm right.
No.
That's
right.
I'll
ludicrous
say
that.
I'll say that, Michigan. I'll say that. I'll
well,
you
I mean,
why.
You can
because
say it, but it's like a ludicrous
these
argument, though. I mean, who are you?
Michigan, these people, listen, any government official that wants to put forward some sort of political point of view or policy is going to go hire a think tank to justify what it is that they want to do. You've got figures all over the place. I'm talking about, these are people who are in business that I talk to who tell me this is what they're going to do. I don't care what statisticians say. I don't care what economists say. I care about the people who are carrying the freight right now. And the people who are carrying the freight right now are telling me what's going to happen. And I don't care what those people say. I don't care what the Office of Management and Budget say. I don't care what the Congressional Budget Office says. I don't care about any of that because they don't know. They're not out there in the field. They're not the ones that have to do it. You talk to one employer here in town that employs over 1,000 people, I got news for you. They're going to be losing their health care later on.
But
that's going to happen.
I'm sure you could find an employer that's going to tell you the contrary of what you just said.
Stanley,
I haven't found one.
Stanley,
not one.
Hold on. I want to say this to you guys. You have to realize that when you talk to employers, you're the only employers that you're going to find who's not going to say that they're going to not do this are your big corporations, Stanley, that you're always referring to. General Motors is not going to do it. Public employees are not going to do it. Chrysler, you know, Honda's not going to do that.
General Motors isn't going to do it.
Johnson and Kimberly-Clark, these guys are not going to do that. But we're talking about the people who employ the majority of America, which is small business. We really need to understand the people who employ, who make the engines run in America is small business. Those are the people who have anywhere from 200 employees and less. Those are the ones who drive America's economy.
You know what's going to happen with the big employers? The ones that you just mentioned, the J&Js, you're going to find that those folks, at least at the mid-skill level and down, where the vast majority of Americans are right now out looking for work, aren't going to hire full-time employees. You're going to cut it off at 28. You're going to have 30-year-olds, 35-year-olds out looking for full-time work, and they're not going to be able to find that because nobody's going to hire them because of the health care law. Why should they? Why should they? They're going to 28, we'll give you a part-time job, 28. You're going to have people working two part-time jobs, 56 hours a week, to try to make ends meet and pay for health care on top of it. That's what's coming. You talk to the waitress over at the restaurants. You talk to the people that are out delivering the newspapers. You talk to this. You talk to that. These are the people that are going to pay the price of the health care. And the IRS is going to be at their door saying, you're going to have to buy it. Uh-uh. It's going to be a disaster.
Well,
it's going to, and I don't, the polemics aren't going to work because I'm talking to the people who are going to be doing it right now.
Go ahead, Michigan. Go ahead, South Carolina.
Hey, listen, you know, the thing that I'm looking at is people have a tendency to think that the government has an endless supply of money. No, that's not the case. The government right now is printing money that is, you know, causing inflation, but they don't have an endless supply of money. We don't have it. There's only so much money that goes around. And what I'm looking at now, just like I said, you know, here a couple of weeks ago, I know the manager at one of the fast food stores, and she had to cut back all but three of her employees to 25 hours a week. You can get no more than 25 hours a week. They thought that they could, you know, send some of the other employees to the other one across town, and they got another one in another town over, but they're in the same company. The checks are cut out of the same place. They can't do it. So those individuals that were getting 30 and 40 hours a week, you know, have lost 15 to 20 hours a week that they won't be able to recover anywhere else besides going to get another job. And that's what's going to happen. But if everybody is in the same boat, man, you're going to have a real problem here. And that's what nobody's looking at. They want the benefit, but they don't want to pay the price, or they don't realize what the price is. It's kind of like we're acting like a bunch of teenagers. We want what we want when we want it and don't think about how we're going to pay for it. That's crazy.
And I don't think we're understanding what that means. Because, if you're indigent, you're going to be okay. If you broke on your back and you're not having any money, you're going to be fine. Maybe. Well, you're going to get health care, but the quality of the health care that you get may not be what you expect. Because, see, there comes a bedside manner and a service that comes with it. And if you'll notice, a lot of your physicians now are going into nurse practitioners or physician's assistants. And so instead of you seeing your physician, you're not seeing a physician's assistant.
I'm going to tell you something else how this is going to affect the indigent, which, you know, are going to be – and I know a bunch of doctors.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of doctors who are friends. I am 62 years old. I'll be 63 years old next week, and we're all looking at retirement right now. We're at that age. If you talk to these guys, doctor after doctor after doctor is closing their practice down or selling their practice to hospitals because they can't afford it anymore. That has to do with Medicare reimbursements, Medicaid reimbursements. I don't think people understand. You know, and you're going to see I don't want to say a rapid decrease, but a slow decrease in the quality of health care in this nation as people leave the profession. It just isn't going to work.
And we don't have a good vetting process of physicians. I don't think we understand that. You know, some of them are certified, but some of them are not inside of certain disciplines. But you don't understand that a lot of them are not coming from American schools either, American medical schools. And you can get a substandard medical degree, become a doctor in the United States of America, and come and practice on you.
There are so many holes, tripwires that are going to come down the pike with this. I honestly don't think it's ever going to get enacted. I mean, I don't see them physically being able to do it.
They're going to have to. I mean, because you have to understand the whole. I mean, you've got 47% of America expecting it.
And by the way, Tracy, I just did a little research in Google. There's and like my two said, you could find a study that's saying differently what you just said. Small business.
I know. Listen,
we're going to find a study with small business owners saying exactly the contrary of what he said. Because don't forget, the Obamacare was basically the same thing that we took with the way that Romney did his thing. And that was the basis of it.
Stanley.
And if we take Massachusetts And there was small business, and we heard all the things that you're saying. There's a lot of small business that say no. We're
Stanley,
happy with what happened.
Stanley.
We're extremely happy.
This is not Massachusetts.
But that the basic was the same. That's what I'm saying.
No. The basis was the same. But okay. This is no. The basis was the same, but this is national. You have to understand what happens when you wimp out. What the administration and what Congress did was they wimped out. Instead of them dealing with access to health care as they should have, and access to health care would have been an insurance regulation and or program that would have made insurance companies give people access to health care. They came after small business and the American electorate.
I want to make a comment on Massachusetts. I'm not going to agree or disagree with you on the assessment of what's happened in Massachusetts. Let me put it to you this way: Massachusetts is an interesting state, and every state is different. One of the things that Romney campaigned on is that health care issues be addressed by each individual state to tailor what that state needs. Massachusetts is one of the most educated states in the nation. It is the highest taxed state in the nation, or at least in the top two of the highest taxed state in the nation. They have a lot of educational institutions, and a lot of employees are tethered to something other than basic manufacturing like we have here in Ohio. What works in Massachusetts might not work here. That's a different kind of vanity, and it has not worked that well in Massachusetts. They've had a lot of problems with it, and the costs are going through the ceiling, and they've been unsuccessful in controlling them. You don't read about it because the press doesn't want you to read about it. But, you know, what Romney wanted to do was let each state kind of tailor a health care plan to their particular state. Their particular state strong points, weak points, type of manufacturing base, who has a large base of seniors, who has a large base of immigrant alien, illegal aliens. We're not allowed to say illegal aliens anymore. I guess that's supposed to be a slur.
That's fine.
Okay, you know, if you're California, you've got one set of issues. If you're New Mexico, you have another. If you're Ohio, you have another. And, you know, the states ought to be able to address it. They could probably do it better at the state level than the national level. If you're dealing with a federal bureaucracy, good luck to you. You know, it doesn't really work.
What? Who's that?
That's me, Tracy. I was just going to say that's why we have state powers in the Constitution. It's to make sure that each state, like what he was just saying, each state, they have different abilities as far as manufacture, as far as what they produce. Some are farm states. Some are, steel states. Some are manufacturing states. It grants these states powers to shape any amount of legislation as they see it helping the state. And that's why we have it.
But let me ask this. Do states really have powers anymore? Because I'm confused by this.
No, and neither do you as an American citizen.
No, you don't.
Huh?
You don't have power as before, like he's saying. Perfect abortion. If we go to the states, like the way he's saying, every state should be different laws for abortion, and that's not the case.
But what I'm saying is, if you look at state powers, because the states do have power, but you don't see them as you don't see the power behind the states as you once did because of the overreach of the federal government. And then that goes for education. I mean, they should have never taken education and made it into a federal department.
Yeah. If you look, I've always thought that our federal system has been underutilized, and you know, it's one of the strong points of this country is we have 335 million people in this country. It's probably a lot easier to monitor laws for, you know, 5 to 15 million people as it is to monitor laws for 350 million people. And we don't use that in this country, and we should use it in this country. Every state is different. And if you look, and I know I saw an article last week in one of the papers I was reading about how they're isolating the South again because the Southern attitudes don't gel with what's going on in Washington right now. And yeah, every state's different. You got to let states kind of choose what they want to do with this stuff because it'll be a whole lot more efficient. You lose whole layers of bureaucracy in making this stuff work.
But we don't have. If you really look at the Constitution, if you look at states' rights. Do states really have rights anymore? Because if you look at this health care program, it really overreached past what the states wanted.
No, they don't have rights anymore. It's but they're it's kind of fun to watch. They're kind of starting to usurp their rights again. They're starting to take their rights back. Different states are doing different things to protect the federal government from coming in and doing this, to protect the people from the federal government coming in and doing that. The one I read today, I think Florida wants to put some laws into effect which to protect the people from drones.
Okay. Can they do that?
You know what? I don't know, but I think we're going to find out.
I mean, because somebody's saying there's no income tax in certain states.
Yeah.
There's income tax in certain states.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, everything is different. So when you look at healthcare and the healthcare mandate, when you look at even same sex marriage, how are they going to deal with this? Yes, sir.
Tracy, I'm going to tell you. I mean, I talk to different people around the state of South Carolina, and trust me, they are not happy, and. What happened was, there was a comment made about clinging to your guns and clinging to your Bibles, okay? And that was not taken very well down here, okay? People remembered that. And what has happened? He's basically gone after those that want firearms. Now, I know some guys that say that's not going to happen. And they do not mind putting their money where their mouth is. We often talk about, are you willing to lay down your life or to, have your life be a statement for what you believe in and trust it. But when you cross over that Mason-Dixon line, you start messing around with the good old boys. And all these good old boys down here, some of them don't have any melanin in their skin, and some of them do. So when you mess around with the South, we have a little bit different attitude down here, and they need to take that into consideration. I mean, you can think I'm an idiot or think I'm stupid or backwards, however you want, but when you start questioning my resolve about what I believe in, you're going to find out just how much and how willing I am to fight for what I believe in and defend the Constitution.
I've noticed something, looking through the cracks of what's being reported in the news and what's not being reported in the news. This past election, they didn't vote for Romney, but I'm not sure the people that voted for the president really voted for the president. It was more of a vote against Romney, and now, as you see states starting, and it'll start, and I think that the biggest thing the states have done to exercise their independence is to back out of forming the healthcare exchanges, and telling the federal government, if you want to do it, you go do it. We're not going to do it. You've got states turning down federal money to build a road because they don't want to maintain the road. States are getting smart, looking at the long-term cost of things. And now you've got states trying to put up protective laws against various different things that the federal government's doing. So that's, and you've got Texas talking about secession, which I think is a hoot, an exercise of futility and nuttyism. But
that's crazy.
But they're crazy. But it's still interesting that is even being discussed in a serious way. I think you're seeing people begin to back off of the president right now. And I really have that sense. I he's a lame duck right now.
What? I have to disagree with that, with just the first point that you made, and that was that the people that voted for Obama did it because they didn't like Romney, which I agree that that's part of it. But I really, I at least in my personal life, I don't know a liberal at all anywhere that's slightly Democrat that isn't in love with Barack Obama. I just... I
very enamored with him. They love him.
Yeah, and I think what thrusted him into office, especially with as much as he won by, I blame on conservatives in the country, because there was a mindset of conservatives saying Mitt Romney is not the true conservative we need right now, or so they voted third party, or they just stayed at home. I think conservatives thrusted Obama into the White House. Now, granted,
I think you're right.
Mitt Romney was not, some miraculous person who was going to save us, but he was something to grab onto before we fell off the cliff. He was something to slow things down, not make them better, slow them down.
I agree with that.
I agree. You're probably right.
I agree with that.
It's just that I am sensing, I was looking at the Drudge today, and they were talking about the people who aren't going to be attending Obama's inauguration.
Oh, wow.
And it's almost stunning. And I think the article that I read, all right, let me see if I can get this old brain of mine working. The synapses aren't snapping on full cylinders right now. The movie director.
Michael Moore?
No. He made Nixon. The movie Nixon. He and his cohort, Oliver Stone, have backed away from Obama in a major, major way, and basically called him everything but a Nazi. I was floored when I read it. Now, these are big supporters. Now, on the left, I think they're concerned. When you get the far left and the far right, there's a degree of commonality when you get to the extremes, whether you're a libertarian on the right or you are a firm believer in individual rights on the left and freedom to do certain things on the left. That freedom is important to both sides. And I think he has disenfranchised his extreme left. They talked about drones. They talked about him killing terrorists rather than attempting to capture them. They talked about issues that we've talked about before, Tracy, on the shows, about not really taking care of the needy in this country.
Yeah.
And they're backing away from them in a major way. It's going to be an interesting couple of years. Any president is a lame duck in his second term after 2 years, because these people have to run for office, and he's not going to be there, and they're not going to be sure he's going to be carrying the standard for the party. I think it started a little bit early for Obama.
Hey,
Mark. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious. In your business, you see how markets fluctuate and people can gain and lose wealth, almost in a matter of a few minutes.
Yeah.
My question is this. Okay. I've for a long time have said that. America has a distorted sense of what poverty really is.
Sure.
And because you deal with finance so much, can you kind of give us some insight on what real poverty, what is the real poverty level? Because when you back out, when you talk about people at the poverty level and you start adding in benefits, if at the same percentage rate, a CEO got the same benefit as the poor did in this country, what do you think their compensation package would be?
Well, my understanding, and I'm no expert on this. I can go by what I've learned in school and some of the stuff that I've observed and read. There's two kinds of poverty in the world. There's relative poverty and absolute poverty. We don't have absolute poverty in this country. Absolute poverty is starving people, no food, no water, no shelter. Something you see in other continents, not certainly North America. Relative poverty is people are poor as compared to what? The poor in the United States, and I'm using quotes around the poor, they have television sets, they have cars, they have access to air conditioning, a lot of them. We don't have people who are starving to death in the streets shooing flies off of them. We just don't have that here. Our poverty level, I believe, is $26,000. Tracy, is that right for a family of four, $26,000?
I think somewhere around there.
Sticking
somewhere around
my
there.
Head. $26,000 doesn't go very far. The benefits that a family of four have would be equal to, in services, at least from what I read over the last couple of weeks, about $60,000 to $62,000 a year. So what we're faced with here are people being trapped in that group where they don't want to give up the services. Because if they go out and make any more money than they're making, they're not going to live as well as they're living now, and that's kind of where we are. That doesn't mean we don't have truly needy people in here, in this country. We certainly have homeless in this country. We have people that aren't eating well in this country. But compared to other countries, we're in pretty good shape. And it sounds like a heartless statement. It's not intended to be. But the way the system works, you don't know when you get people trapped into that system. I don't think that's a good thing, and it just perpetuates, dependency.
Let me jump in on this question a little bit. The number is 347-945-5229. Covina Man, you live in Los Angeles, where we and living out there, we see a lot of homeless. But we have to really understand that. A good portion of Americans homeless. I'm going to say a good portion. I'm not going to say all, but a good portion. A lot of them is due to mental health issues and choice issues. I know people who live in poverty, live in poverty by choice. It's not because they choose. It's not because they have no other choice. They choose to live in the poverty that they're in, and they like where they are. And then you have a lot of people who have mental health issues, or they have substance abuse issues that has caused them to spiral into a homeless situation. Now you have some people who, I asked the question I think last week or week before last. I don't understand how a mom with children can become homeless without any food and without any shelter, when I see so many shelters, aid to dependent children, and other subsidies that they can go after just because they have children. Single men and single women who do not have dependent children, they a lot of times end up on the bottom because they don't have the assistance available to them because they don't have the children, because the assistance seems to follow the children more than a single person. And if I'm wrong, South Carolina or somebody jump in, because you see homelessness, but and people living in their cars with their kids, but sometimes it's because they refuse to go on assistance,
or they just don't know how to get it,
or they don't know where to go. But if you go to any mission, if you go to any shelter, you may not be ideal, but you'll find a place. 314, your mic is on.
I've been listening to your program for the last 2 days, and I just figured out what the problem has been. When Jeff is gone and Michigan Man is quiet, your program runs smooth.
What is up with that? Hey, Jeff is going to take offense. He's in the chat room. Don't be careful, Bianca.
Do you see the law that Wyoming is trying to bring about, if any official try to uphold a federal ban on, like the ones that Obama proposed yesterday, they would be accused of being a felon. What do you think about that, Tracy?
Did you just change the subject? Oh, hold on. I got to go back to what I said, because I need to make sure we answered that right, because South Carolina asked about poverty, and I got to make sure we got that right.
Oh, you got that right.
We were talking about poverty. He asked about poverty. Somebody in the chat room said, this guy's never seen poverty. He may not have seen it, but
a large part of my practice as a lawyer deals with Medicaid issues. I work with seniors and applications for Medicaid, and I'm down at Health and Family Services. Not a whole lot, but. A fair amount, and yes, I've seen the poverty down there, and it breaks my heart. It's horrible.
Yes, Al.
I,
one of the most eye-opening experiences I ever had was when I went to Honduras and Panama. And
now that's Poe.
We were told. We did not take more, and then they were only let like 5 or 10 of us go at a time. We could not take more than 5 lempiras out in time with us.
You got to tell us what a lempira is.
A lempira is the equivalent to, at that time, a lempira was the equivalent of $2.50. You could take one lempira and go downtown or go out in the bill and have an excellent time. But what I was making in a payday back then, and this was the early 80s, they were making in 1 year. And so, you know, we could not do that because we would upset the economy, if their economy and all the rest of the stuff. But it's just unbelievable. We have no concept of what poverty is. And you go down to places like Central America, and even over in Korea, if you get away from the tourist spots and you can actually see what poverty really is.
Mexico.
You
don't have to go far. Go to Baja, Mexico. I mean, see, this is the issue. We as Americans are spoiled poor people. When I talk to people from Puerto Rico that come here, and, you know, they're like America. There's no Social Security there. There's no unemployment there. So when you're out of work, you need a job, you go find something to do to go get it. Our entitlement process, not saying that we should not help people who need assistance, but we have made the entitlement process so lax that it is ineffective, just like our penal system was supposed to be a place of rehabilitation. You put people in the penal system to rehabilitate, and what you do is you put them in there for college, and they come out worse than they went in.
Let me add this, too, Tracy. We're the only country on the planet, okay? I talked to a ton of people all over the world just through, you know, social media or whatever. We're the only country on the planet where somebody will sit at home because they consider a job underneath them, and they'll actually watch their possessions and things being taken away for the reason of not going to work at a McDonald's or a Burger King. We're the only country in the world that does that.
Now, hold on, wait a minute. I got to come back to that, but go ahead. I think Bianchi wanted to say something, and I want to make sure he got it.
I don't see no poverty in America. I see poor. Of course, I haven't been all over America. I understand that there's some strange things going down in the southern states. But same thing in African countries. Countries I'm at, they have poor. They don't have no right-out poverty. People
are
just poor. And it's based on the society, the level of what we call poor here, you know, just because, what was it, $20-some-odd thousand for a family of four? Well, yes, over there, that would be very, very luxurious living because it doesn't cost that much to live there. And you're right. In the United States, you have programs that help perpetuate being poor or staying in those particular levels because of these entitlement programs.
And I got to throw this into the mix. I had a conversation this morning. You know, Matt, you talked about McDonald's. Now, you have to understand, if I lose my job today and I go down to McDonald's and I start working for him, me going to Mark's office and getting a job with him can be deterred because I worked at McDonald's before I came to him.
Was that by me again?
See,
yeah, me too. I'm not sure where you're going.
If I lose my job here at the radio station, now, I've worked at a prosecutor's office. I have worked in corporate America for Gillette and for Bristol-Myers. And I have done some things. And I'm just being, you know, a little bit transparent here. And now I'm a talk show host, and I've been the general sales manager of a radio cluster. If I go to work at McDonald's right now because I've lost my job to make my ends meet, and I go to Mark has a job opening for an executive in his office. Because of my past employment at McDonald's as a clerk, I may not get the next job, especially as a 48-year-old woman.
Sure.
I may not get the job at Mark's office as an executive because my last job happened to be at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Just based on perception.
I can see what you're saying. You're saying perception from Mark's office. Is that what you're getting at?
Perception from Mark's office with my last employer being McDonald's.
Right.
It can ruin my resume.
I guess I can see that. That's up to the private sector.
But hear me what I'm saying. But that is because of the illusions of Americans. That if I lose my job and there's no other jobs right now in the industry that I'm in, and it's a closed industry, and I'm trying to make a transition, and in the meantime, I'm not trying to depend on, you know, unemployment. I go to work at McDonald's, and McDonald's says they'll give me, you know, 40 hours a week, and all I got to do is go in there and open up at 4 o'clock in the morning and make sure things run, and I start flipping burgers, and I'm not his manager, but he trusts me to do what he does. But I put that on my resume as my last employer.
You know what? Let me run this by you, though. I mean, I can see that, but let's say that I myself own a radio corporation, and you come into my office. I'm going to look at your resume and say, well, you worked, doing all these wonderful things. Then you're working at McDonald's for 6 months, and you're coming back here. Why did you do that? You would tell me, I'm trying to make ends meet. I would tell you, well, you could have went on some benefits, unemployment that would have been comparable, and if you would have told me that you don't feel comfortable doing that and you feel more comfortable making your own way, you're hired in my company. That's for sure. I think that there's a lot of business owners out there that would actually appreciate that.
But they don't give you that opportunity. You hear me what I'm saying? We need to look at the perception. So you said, when we talk about trying to get the hustle and not trying to become dependent upon the system, you do better by saying I've been on unemployment for 99 weeks than saying I went to McDonald's to go get a job. Because if they're not hiring, especially in the climate that we're in, you may not be able to go from what you're doing to what you're doing. You may not be able to transition. And if you're looking for a job and you're older, because, people that are losing jobs now, the problem is they're older now. The unemployment people are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who are being reassessed and realigned. When they go back out in the workplace, and a lot of them don't have, exit packages, that's what I'm talking about. And we're talking about educated people who have done quite a bit. We need to understand how this works. And I'm saying this because we have to be careful, because there's a lot of things that society pigeonholes people so that they cannot accomplish independence. That's why I brought it up.
It's a certainly a issues that we're dealing with now, people who are, 40, 50, 60, going out looking for work. Man, it just isn't there.
That's what I'm saying. So what do I do?
You know what?
I'm 48 years old. I need to get a job. What am I going to do? You won't hire me because I went to McDonald's and now I'm a McDonald's clerk.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. For somebody like me who's always worked for myself, I've never really worked for anyone else. My answer would be very simplistic. Go take care of yourself. Go start a business. Go do this. Go do that. And that's not a really good answer to that question, because, it's something that I've been doing since I've been, 26 years old, shifted for myself with the support of my wife, who, had a good job. But I there's just no place for these folks to go. And there's no effort. There's no reach out to them either. There's no place to reach.
But society itself is perpetual. I look at people who come out of the penal system.
Yeah.
No matter what they've done, no matter how much good they've done, we make it to where they cannot become employable. When we talk about poverty, when we talk about health care, when we talk about becoming independent of the system, we make it to where you cannot become independent of the system based on the society measures of America, and we like to keep people in poverty. We don't assist people out of poverty. We make them get in even deeper.
On the other hand, Tracy, and I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to say this because I've seen it happen with my own eyes. You see people that say, I'm going to go work for McDonald's. Let's start with, there's nothing wrong with working for McDonald's. These are good jobs. They're honest jobs. They're hard jobs, and people work hard. By the same token, if you've worked as an executive or in a place prior,
mm-hmm.
I will guarantee you within 3 or 4 years, you're going to be up in the company because you know how to work. You show up to work. Showing up is half the Now, I got a friend of mine. Okay, he was a mucky muck for one of the companies that went out of business here. All right, he lost his job. He was 55 years old. Where's he going to go?
Yeah.
All right, and this is exactly the example you said. If we couldn't find anything, so he took a janitor's job in one of the local school systems.
Okay.
Okay. And the guy's sweeping the floor, cleaning the toilets, doing that kind of work. Then all of a sudden, they realized they needed some work done in the school, some construction work done in the school. And he said to them, they talked with him about what he might be able to help them with. This guy is now the systems manager for that school system because over a period of 3 or 4 years, he moved up. And all of a sudden, at age 60, he finds himself being the guy that's running the show for the facilities in all of the school system.
He expanded his horizon when looking for a job instead of sticking to something he either went to school with or what have you. And that's what that's my point, is I went through kind of the same thing. And maybe I've been lucky 100% of the time, but I had a horrible instance not too long ago where I lost my job. It was beyond my control. It didn't have to do with what I did with the company. It had to do with health issues. And I expanded my horizons, and I found a completely different area of work because it was there and available and would have hired me. I took it. And now I'm making more money through climbing that ladder than I've ever made before. I'm happy.
But again, we've got to remember, I said this is a societal issue. We have a society that is bent on entitlements. We prepare for Medicare. We prepare for Social Security. We don't prepare for retirement.
Oh.
Ah. See,
I'm never planning on retiring.
See,
I've worked for myself. Lawyers don't die. We're just like a fungus. We keep
you keep on going. But see, most people don't prepare. They don't prepare for retirement.
Yeah.
You've got people who, you know, they go to school to get a job. You went to school to have a practice.
Yeah.
When we society, you know, when we go to work and you go come out of college and you've done something for 20 years, and now it's time for you to go somewhere else because now they have downsized. Society puts you in a pigeonhole that is not very good.
So what are your choices, Tracy?
Your choice is to reshape your thinking, but society has to help you with it.
No, they don't.
They did.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
You did it.
My environment did it. And
I'll tell you what.
But I've been selling paper since I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'd sell you paper. I mean, sheets of paper when I was a kid. I've been hustling. I'm a hustler.
Tracy, bad things, listen, I'm going to tell you, my wife was a teacher. You know, my wife was a teacher. And she lost her job. And it wasn't a very nice way that she lost her job. It was kind of nasty stuff.
Right.
Now, she had two choices. She could lay down and die.
Well, she didn't do that.
Or she started a business.
But environment.
When she was done, no, it's not environment. It's hard work.
No, but her environment drove her. I mean, environment, your environment shapes your perception of where you think you can go. If you don't see it happen, if you don't have something to grab onto, then you don't know that you can get there. And what happens to people is they limit their abilities from selling pies door to door, to make ends meet, to grow to the next level, because I change industries altogether. But again, but my environment grows because no one ever allowed me to lay down and have that pity party inside my shaping of entitlements. I'm just not an entitlement-driven person.
I think you're missing the point where the issue is. The issue isn't if you go to work for McDonald's, you're not going to get hired down the pike. The issue is McDonald's won't hire you because you're overqualified for the job. And I think that's where the wall goes. Yeah, you just got out and do. You know, go out and do. Something has happened in this country. You know,
people, we stopped drive.
You know, people. When my in the 1950s, when my dad in the 40s, when you know, you went and did what you had to do to get by in life. People don't do that anymore. People don't do, and they cut off their own abilities. Good, hardworking, capable people will always rise to the top, and I don't care in what endeavor they're in.
But what I'm saying is we have demonized that. We should not be judged on what we did previously when I'm just trying to make ends meet. But society is now making – the competition is so fierce.
Yeah.
Society is now making it to where you do better being indigent. They're driving you to poverty.
Sure.
Because poverty makes money. Hold on, Stanley, because I got to pick up Alex. Poverty makes money, and that's a problem that we really need to address when we talk about poverty, when we talk about health care. The reason why we're waiting for somebody to give us something because nobody has really made me understand that I can go get it for myself.
How do you fix that?
Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, good afternoon, Tracy.
Hey, good afternoon.
And everybody else. I wanted to say that what you're talking about, in my opinion, is really a symptom of a poor economy and a poor monetary policy of this country. Because honestly, if we had a thriving economy, then we wouldn't be pushing like elderly people out of the door. Companies wouldn't be forcing them into retirement. We wouldn't be dealing with all these things. But the only reason why we are, it's just a symptom of a poor economy, and nobody's really dealing with that because we don't have real capitalism. We have crony capitalism. You know, everybody is looking up. They're waiting on the government to do something, and that wasn't the intention of how the country was formed. It was supposed to be everyone's supposed to be independent, and the federal government was supposed to be marginal, just very, very small. But now it's just completely opposite. You know, they just keep taxing and taxing and growing, and businesses can't do anything anymore without permission from from the federal government a lot of times, and that's where a lot of industry comes from. Everybody's waiting on a grant or a contract or something from the government to spur economic activity, and that's really the problem. I think that's the crux of the problem, what we're talking about here, why, it's just all symptoms of a poor economy. And we need to I think we really need to deal with that and get back to real free market economics and sound money. And all these issues would just go away, in my opinion.
I agree, and I think we have at least 4 years to go before we can start addressing those issues. It's not going to happen under this president. You know, sound money, economic freedom doesn't. You know, the one area of growth we've had in this country, which is kind of a carry-on of what you were talking about, is in the natural gas industry and the fracking industry, because they don't really have any rules regulating it right now, and they're going crazy. They're going crazy in Washington. In the meantime, it's booming.
Give them a minute. They're going to do it. Hey, hold on. I got to take a break. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break. And Michigan man, if you don't leave me alone, I don't know why you guys pick with me. Again, you're listening to Tracy here on WSOM. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
Hello.
What's up, Stan?
Hey, what's up? There's something that I heard that I disagree. I know a lot of Americans who work very hard, but don't make it also. You can work as hard as you want to work. There's a difference between working hard and working smart. You can work hard, as much as you want, but you can still not make it in this economy right now. Not because you work hard, but you make it.
You know what? You do have a point there, Stan. I just come from personal experience. That's the best I can do. And in my personal experience, I know way too many people that have good jobs that take them for granted and are actually thinking about quitting those jobs to look for something better instead of finding something better first, living off the government to sustain them until they find something better. Now, this personal experience is where I come from. I know a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people. And I think it's a legitimate – maybe not the main issue. I don't know. But I think it's a legitimate issue that people need to, instead of being laid off and being in a bad spot, that instead of sitting there and sulking and waiting for somebody to do something for them, I think that they need to stand up and just get it done, whether it comes to fruition immediately or not.
No, I agree with you with that part. I think a lot of people are so used to the old system, which is go to school, get a degree, go incorporate, go to a business, put work hard, and you'll go upper, and that's not true anymore. That's not true anymore.
I'm totally in agreement with that. Absolutely.
That's not true, and we need to tell that to our son and daughter the truth. Because a lot of son and daughter are coming out of college saying, where's my six-figure salary? Where's my... I've had a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, whatever. I'm supposed to have this salary. That's what we promised. And you lose hope. A lot of those young people lose hope because they thought that that's the way they're supposed to. A lot of people believe that.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time that people were really honest, saying, if you want to make a six-figure salary, this is what you got to do. You got a different way. You got a school way. You got that way. You got that way. That's what I would have loved to learn when I was younger. Tell me.
And there's family.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I completely agree with you, Stanley. I'm 32. I have a little over 10 years experience as an engineer and product designer. I have a master's degree, but I tell you, if I knew 10 years ago what I know now, I would have did things completely different. I would have still got my degree, but you know, just the decisions I made after getting my degree would just have been completely different, you know, if I had just had that information. Because, honestly, people think that, you know, people think that, like, engineers, oh, you know, they make good money. The people that make good money is the ones that pay me.
Yeah, exactly.
And so...
And
you know,
is it not true,
like,
Alex, that engineers are coming
and
out
they're not
of
working
what,
as hard as
in
I am.
India? Is it not true that there's a lot of engineers coming out of India so much that it's getting crazy and crazy, and a lot of companies are looking at that also?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, hard work, it's like there's a, you know, India has a growing tech population, and engineers and technologists, programmers and things, and they work very hard, but they're... You know, it's insane. Like, the same job that would pay, like, $40 an hour here, they're getting paid, like, between $8 and $12 an hour in India doing the same work, like, you know, software programming and even some engineering. I mean, they're not, like, as advanced as we are, but a lot of that stuff that can be offloaded, it actually is offloaded into India because of that. And they're working hard as crap, you know. I mean, it's...
Well, plus, if they were to come over to this country, they would be more than happy to do it for $20 an hour instead of $40. It's the same thing when you talk about Mexicans coming across the border to do, you know, I hate to be stereotypical, but like landscaping and things of that sort. They do it for an extremely cheap price, but it's more than they're getting paid in their country to do it. And I can see that. I'm in agreement with that as well.
And that's what business owners are going to do the best. Like you said, it's all about profit for business owners. They need to make profit. So who is it going to pay? An engineer that's going to cost them $40, $50 an hour? Or an engineer that could do the same work for, like you say, $8, $10? You're going to get the $8, $10 guy.
Right. But here's
that's
the
business.
Difference. Here's the difference. And me, I used to own a company a while back. Because of health reasons, I don't. But... here's what, especially if you're a private industry and you're left to your own devices, meaning that if you screw up, you're going to fail yourself on your own and no one's going to be there to pick you up, is the people that work underneath you, okay, your workers, you want to make sure, knowing that there's competition out there, that you're going to pay them accordingly for the services and try to keep the best services that you can. If you have employees that you know are the best in the industry and your competition is trying to get them, you're going to want to pay them enough to keep them interested in your company and treat them well. So, and that's the difference with the private industry in this country as opposed to other countries where government gets involved and bails out industry that just does whatever they want. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. I see what you're saying.
But, you know, the nature of, for the most part, entrepreneurship, well, and that's probably in most countries, is the profit motive. And so,
right. You're right.
Even if you have a company that's running well and it's got a good return, bottom line, it's still the job of the management team to see where they can cut costs, even if they're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a continuous thing. How do we cut costs? How do we cut costs? We're doing well, but we still want to cut costs. So just the nature of that, they're going to look for places where they can do it cheaper.
Right.
Just the nature of that, they're going to
do
it.
And you're absolutely right.
It has nothing to do with government or any of that, yeah. That's just the nature of that, man.
And you're right. It is the nature. The difference is in this country, workers have the ability to leave their job and go elsewhere. So you need to be very careful about how you go about cutting those costs. Private industry in this country is great because it makes people nervous about their decisions, is my point. Now, do all of these corporations and companies believe this? Do they all, you know, have this mind frame of, I have to take pride in what I'm doing and make sure everybody... No, there's a... And granted, 80% of these corporations are probably extraordinarily greedy. But I say let them, leave them to their own devices and let them fail because of their treatment towards the workers that make them the money. Because once they lose them, it's all over.
Well, I'm sorry to say a lot of employees are still, if you treat them badly, are still going to stay because they got to pay the mortgage, they got to pay debt, they got to pay this. When you have nothing to pay, a lot of people are going to take the risk of doing it on their own. But when they have debts to pay, they'll stay. I'm sorry, they'll stay. Not a lot of people are going to stay. Even if I treat it wrongly, I'm still going to stay because even though I'm supposed to get paid more. Because we live in a hard market, and that's the truth.
And you're right. But however, I could, once again, from personal experience, this guy that you're talking to right now, if I were to be treated inhumanely or had major problems with the boss or the corporation that I work with, I'm gone. And I'll work for less somewhere else to try to acquire a little bit of respect just to keep myself happy during the day. I'll still make my ends meet somehow. I always have. I think one thing is that I've done is I never worked for major corporations. Ever in my life have I ever done that. I've always worked for small business. And the reason for that is I understand where the business is going. I know where the owner's head is, and I know when to get out and when to stay. That's my own personal opinion, but, you know, what are you going to do? But I see your guys' point on it as well.
And what Alex said about being able to take the same job, say, to India, right, where someone is doing it here for 40, and then you can go over there and they'll do it for 12 and pretty much the same job. See, mm-hmm. That's the mystery of what America is, and I believe that's what you have to answer. How did we become a nation where what a person can do for 12 over there, now for 12, they wouldn't be able to live properly for 12? Huh?
That's simple.
Stuff
here costs too damn much.
Yeah,
huh?
Purchase power. Yeah.
Stuff here in the United States costs too much. If you're on the same wage level as the people in India, then you surely wouldn't be able to pay for the massive military and the social programs that this country offers.
So that's what I'm saying. That's the America that needs to – that's the way you want to get the definition of America. The thinking that caused that, that's truly America. Now, I'm not saying whether it's good or bad or indifferent, but that really is what sets us apart, that right there.
Hey, Mr. You know the thing that helped propel America in that direction? The many the 2.5 centuries that it had a free labor – that permitted America to jump ahead of other nations in the world. And you look at the same thing with the UK with its colonization, when that portion of the population didn't have to expend time, energy, and innovations on producing food when you had food being produced down in West African countries.
But you ain't gonna be able to tell the average American that. They don't want to hear that, man. They're going to say you crazy.
Well, no, it's not. It was true, though. That's the way nations got ahead.
Yeah.
What are y'all talking about?
But
Hello?
Nothing, honey.
Listen, I ain't talking to you, Michigan, because you guys talk, you guys, y'all know I can't run the board and run the chat room and talk to Mark and remember what I'm saying all at the same time. And y'all dog me out. Now, leave the migraine. I know he's a nut. He's allowed to be a nut. He's just nutty. I'm trying to figure out what. But if that's what floats his boat, float on. Michigan, you're in trouble.
What I do?
Don't be helping him, egging him on.
Okay.
He's,
all
you
right.
know, don't do it. Just don't.
Well,
I was talking to
Tracy.
Pionk, I didn't see yours. I didn't see yours.
Somebody
was,
in that room.
Now, Pionk, I want to thank you for actually embracing that I do have more of one clear thought every now and then. But,
well,
Pionk is trying to get a date.
What truth is due.
No, he got married already.
Well, he can still get a date.
He can't get a date if he's married.
No,
I respect
Tracy better than that. But
you have
to tell truth where truth is due.
I get beat up a lot, and I get beat up by a lot of people. But I don't think people really understand the passion that I have to see. What I envision as a great society.
Well, I have seen you evolve because I've been listening to you for quite some time and have been going back and forth with you too. But everybody has things to learn, especially when you introduce or come in contact with something you're not familiar with. And it takes time. And the fact that you do evolve shows that, you know, it demonstrates your character and reveals a lot in you that people, other words, would not see.
But I really want to see it. I want to see us grow. There are too many people in America who are not living the American dream because somebody blew it out or never introduced them to it. And that bothers me. I mean, I can understand if the American dream is not there and no one can achieve it. But there are too many people who are achieving it every day that don't deserve it. And for some reason, I know too many people who deserve it who don't know that they can go get it. And our young people, the people that follow behind us, they deserve better. And before I let you speak, Pionki, I asked Mark, when he comes back here, which will be the first Thursday of February, we're going to talk about money. And I'm going to talk about estate planning. We need to explain and we need to understand so that we can go to lawyers and have wills and have estate planning and learn what happens when you go into a nursing home and you're not prepared for it and how they're going to take your home no matter what you paid for it, no matter how much you built for it, no matter how many kids you wanted to give to it, because they can't afford that $5,500 a month bill for extended care.
Well, you know, you were talking about money. The mailman just delivered my book, Baker's Son, about the Jamaican American who started his business, and you know, in 2011 they done $100 million worth of business. And also, I ordered another book, which you talk about all the time. It's called The Anatomy of a Hustle. Cable comes to South Central Los Angeles, and that is a heck of a book that we need to read. And you know, what's contained in there about the experiences that these two young black innovators, who had their own money, had over $50 million of capital to start a cable in Los Angeles. Look at the things that even blacks, Mayor Bradley and some others, put out against them, whereas they could not compete and provide that service.
Wow.
We talk
about
it all the time.
Absolutely.
What's the name of the book again?
Anatomy of a Hustle.
That's like a
book. Who wrote that?
Well, I don't have it. You can get it on Amazon.
Okay.
I listened to the young man who was involved in it. He's done an interview on a radio program. And get this. He went and sued. He took it to court, and this judge, this black female judge, ruled against them. They appealed it all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court overturned her ruling, and they came back to her, and she got pissed, and she said she was going to sit on the case and that she had to award anything for damages. It would only be a dollar.
I'm looking it up right now. I want to see this. It sounds like a good book.
I am too, and I'm trying to find it, and you're not helping me out. Got it. When cable comes, yeah, I found it. Thank you. It's important that the quality of life, people don't deserve to live in squander. And people people are working entirely too hard. But we are raising a generation of young people, and we're making them go backwards before they can ever prepare to go forward. And I don't think we're prepared what that means. Because our children are actually our future, and they have an entitlement mentality. And they do not have a good work ethic, and they do not have an education. What are they going to do if the hippies are of the 60s and 70s are our leaders today? What's this hip-hop generation going to be when I turn 75?
Well, it's going to be very sad. One of the dire things is that you're not going to be able to compete, especially with these emerging nations. The people in these countries are striving forward, and you can see it. I mean, they're right amongst you. They've been able to take jobs that we don't qualify for, and it's going to continue to get sadder.
But they come in here ready to work, and I got to go back to Philadelphia, which is not here today. But they come over here, and they're willing to do absolutely anything, go anywhere, do anything to get where they want to go and to make sure that their children get what they need to have so they don't have to work as hard as they are. But our children in our society are so spoiled.
And, you know, another thing, too, Tracy, as we were talking about before you came on the show, came back, is that the cost of living here in the United States is just tremendous. Foreigners come here and take these high-profile jobs, earn a whole lot of money, and they're able to send those dollars back home, where one U.S. dollar equals as much as five of theirs. And look at the leverage that they have in order to create institutions, facilities, manufacturing, production. They're able to do so much, much more, thus propelling their people, giving their people a heck of a boost toward striving forward.
But you know, and therein what is what blacks should be doing.
Hold on. Who's that?
That was me.
Go ahead, South Carolina. Alex, come out of that machine shop you're in.
The thing about it is, though, you know, we talk about the high cost of living. You know, maybe the cost of living is not as high as we think it is. Maybe it's our standards that's making our cost of living high. You know, we don't have to eat out, or we don't have to, you know, we don't have to live in you know, downtown or uptown, wherever the luxury areas are, or maybe we don't have to have that particular car. Maybe all we need is transportation, or maybe we don't need a car at all. We just use public transportation. But if we do these things that we know that'll benefit us and help us save the capital that we need, the money that we need. Maybe our cost of living would go down, and instead of us trying to have it on the front end, maybe we should work and strive to have it on the back end when in today's society, we're going to need it. You know, we want to live life to the fullest and do whatever we want and however we want to do it and not have any regard for, you know, for that rainy day down the road. So, you know, I've seen people, you know, live a lower, what we would call a lower standard, not have cable, not have a cell phone, you know, have a little one phone in the house, and they're paying $10 a month for it, and just live that way, and then banking the rest of it.
But you have to understand, in our society, we have conditioned America to say you have to have a microwave. You live in a substandard home without a microwave, y'all.
But
you're
conditioning.
See, if you go,
I don't have a microwave.
Alex, you don't count because you're still wearing the same Dickies you was wearing in high school. You don't count.
You gotta know.
You gotta know it.
You have to put me out there like that.
Yes, wait a minute. Hold on, Alex. Where's my birthday present?
You ain't get it? It was in the mail. I guess, you know, that dang post office, you know.
Alex, there was a personal carrier. Where's my birthday present?
Yeah, let me check the tracking number.
That's what I say about you.
He'll be back to you next week.
Okay. we need to comprehend in saying what I'm saying is our young people, you go to school with hand-me-downs, and unless you teach people how to live in a second-hand home where hand-me-downs are okay, you know, buying clothes from the second-hand store is okay, how to go to the pawn shop to shop for the microwave that you think you have to have, those kinds of things. If you're not, you kids are cruel.
Can I ask you something, Teresa?
Yeah, Alex.
I really think, you know, do you think that maybe that some people, some parents, especially black parents, they don't prepare their kids? I mean, not only don't they prepare, but they don't make provisions for their children. Because hold on, hear me out. Because a lot of
why you ask me that question?
Because a lot of stuff
you know
we're complaining about, you know. A lot of things we're talking about, you know, we see other people do will actually create a business to hand off to their children, or, you know, set up certain investments for their children. But we're not thinking like that, you know. We're not making those provisions, you know.
Why would we spend?
But see, when you say the why not, Tracy, I think there's a lot of factors you have to put in there before you come up with a valid answer. You just can't. It's almost like saying you got 10 of these young guys with their pants hanging down, and the answer is get a bullhorn and tell them all to pull up their pants. Well, if it was that easy, we wouldn't be in the shape we were in.
Let me say this, and I got to go back to parenting. I have never slammed the door in my life because I wasn't allowed to slam a door coming up.
Wasn't even allowed to have the door closed.
If you really want to know the truth about it.
If you had a door on the hinges.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't have that opportunity. Now, wait a minute, hold on.
Your room.
You know,
your
you're
room.
Talking about,
that's not your room.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, if I wanted to dress like everybody else, I better find a new way to dress when I left home and find a way to get back to my old dress when I got back home, when I walked back in the door. And I was wild, but I was never stupid. When I look at these young people busting a sag and these girls looking like little hookers, why are we surprised that the parents are not supporting them and not saving for them when they buy the clothes that make them look like little thugs?
Yeah, well, that's a backwards analysis, though. Yeah, that's a backwards analysis.
Those clothes are not cheap.
What'd you say?
Clothes are not cheap.
Parents don't teach. I mean, why would I be a single parent and have to go home and wash clothes when I got a teenager in the house?
That's crazy. Wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Hey, he bought it already.
Yeah, I bought it.
Okay, go ahead. I'm listening.
That got silent quick.
I mean, I'm sitting here. He's sitting over there playing. He bought Anatomy of a Hustle already. He downloaded it.
That feels like a really good book. I
want
to read that thing. Yeah, I just downloaded it.
Can we share downloads?
Huh?
Can we share Amazon books?
I think there can. I don't know. I've never tried.
We'll have to try that one.
Okay.
I'm cheap.
Now, let me tell you something about Pianchi. Ever since I've been affiliated with this show, Pianchi, anything that he's mentioned, I do look up and I will read. The guy, he's extraordinarily smart. That's why every time I see him, I'm like, he's someone to pay attention to for sure. He's definitely got his nose in those books. That's for sure.
Tell you what, true stories are always the best stories. Because that's, you know, it's amazing the stuff that happens in real life. You can't write it. So that's like a good,
it does.
A good read.
It does. Yes, South Carolina.
I understand what you're saying, you know, with these kids and stuff like this, but there has to be some type of sanity, some type of reasoning from these parents. You cannot go on and treat these kids this way.
But you're
and allowing
point.
Them to have this. What's the point?
Let me tell you the point is, parents are us.
Yeah, I understand that.
See, the problem that we have is the parents
are my generation and your generation. We're in our 40s now, because between the 40s and the parents before us, they're the ones who dropped the ball. Because my children, who are now in high school, I started having kids at 20, maybe. And then the ones behind me who had started having kids at 15. Because remember, right after we got out of school, we had this huge boom of teenage parenting, where they started having daycares in the classroom. And for them to save money, what I did is I took them off of me and put them in their own home so that they could take care of themselves, so that I wouldn't have to pay for it and they would get public assistance.
Let me add this too. As a parent, and once again, I can only speak from personal experience, I have certain ways of raising my children, and it generally goes along with the way I was raised, and my parents were very old school parents as far as the way I was brought up. I have to deal so much, and it's every day, every hour, every minute struggle against society coming into my home and telling me what to do. I have to battle against this nonstop. I have an older daughter that I had to deal with grandma about, because grandma kept introducing ideas into her head nonstop that I had to deprogram because of the way that I raised my children. With my current children, it's now dealing with school and the ideas being introduced to them there. Their friends, because their friends' parents allow them to do certain things. It's a nonstop struggle. There's a lot of parents that definitely need, to be woken up and say, wait a second, you're allowing these problems to happen. Now, I may sound like, somebody who's complaining, but honestly, as a parent who's responsible, who tries to put a work ethic and a learning ethic into my kids, society is a major issue in raising my children.
So now take society and make environment and then put in poverty.
And what are you trying to say, Tracy?
You got a real mess.
Poor people. And that's the thing about it, see. We were poor, but we had standards. We were poor, but we had character. So money and being poor is not an excuse. Not by a long shot.
But our parents made us have we had a standard. What I'm saying is now in society and in our environment, education is no longer necessary. We're not pushing for it. We're not demanding it, because the next generation of children who are now our grandchildren or our children are not demanding it from the school districts. And those of us who knew better, we've ejected ourselves out of the inner city entirely and gone to the suburbs, and it is no longer our problem.
So now are you bringing up a urban issue? I want to make sure I'm not introducing any race-based talk.
It is an inner city issue. Okay. It is an African American issue, but it has sprinkled over into the white society also. See, this is something that we as African Americans need to understand. Even though we are feeling the pneumonia, the suburbs really have a cold, and the rural areas, because they feel the fringe of it. It's like with drugs. They didn't think the drugs was a problem until they found out it was in their backyard too.
Tracy, I don't think anyone on this phone believes, and I hope no one believes, that there will not always be a class system where you will have the entire ladder from rich all the way down to poor. I hope you don't believe that.
Now, I got a question, Mark. Do you think there'll always be a class system?
I think there'll always be a class system.
Okay. There always has been.
There's always going to be rich people. There's always going to be poor people. That's just kind of how it works.
Okay. And here's what we're talking about.
That just failed.
So what we're talking about is who's going to be the poor, and who has the ability to make sure that they're not the poor, and who is on the other end of that.
Well, here's the thing. you know, it doesn't make any difference. There's always going to be somebody that's poorer than you are. So in a sense, you're going to have the poor with you at all times, no matter what level you get up to. So trying to you can do everything you want, anything you want to do to try and raise somebody up from the poverty level. It all depends on that individual and how they are at their station. When I say their station, their point in life. And there's nothing wrong with being poor. There's nothing wrong with being poor, guys.
No, hold on. There is something wrong with being poor. There's nothing wrong with not having riches. But see, we have to understand, poor is a state of mind. Being broke and not having any money is okay. Being poor and thinking that you can't do any better, that's an issue, because that's an emotional issue, and people don't have to be poor. Go ahead.
And blaming it on somebody else.
Correct.
No, wait now. I hear what you're saying, but I really want to say this. Yes, there is an oppressor, and as much as
absolutely.
We want to try and put
you're
the
absolutely.
Blame,
that's right.
As much as we want to put the onus on us, to achieve life's success that supposedly life promised us, there is an oppressor, whether the oppressor
absolutely.
Is outside of you or whether the oppressor is you, there is an oppressor. Being poor, I'll say it my way, Tracy, and not to disagree with you, I agree with you, it's a state of mind. The state of mind, I think, comes in with a person being a kind, generous, caring, thoughtful human being, whether you have money or not. And so what I think the problem is, we're running across a generation that seemingly has some money or access to some money, which would appear that they're rich, but they're not rich because they're poor in spirit. And it's all about you being a generous person, a kind person, a compassionate person. And what we're not coming across in today's time are people that carry those attributes. So when you do come across your wealth financially, you're still a poor in spirit person because you haven't learned what it means to share. You haven't learned what it means to give. Where the person that is poor because they don't have any money, they happen to be richer than you because in their heart of hearts, anything is yours that they have. They're not trying to say, I can't afford to give you anything, which people with money generally do, just like people without money generally do. You have people that are poor that have money because they're poor in spirit. Then you have people that are poor without money because they're poor in spirit. It affects both sides of the fence.
Now, let me refute that for a second. And I see where he's coming from. The difference is in today's age and over the last probably 40 to 50 years especially, as far as money goes and helping somebody else out with money, The people who are wealthy with cash, not in soul, I understand your point there, but people that are wealthy in cash in the last 40 or 50 years haven't given as much to, I don't know, charities and such as they used to because of government oppression or government interference via the tax code and such. People back in the 1800s and early 1900s bailed this country out of so many possible depressions. It was ridiculous because they gave of their pocketbook and of their hearts because of any other issues that came up in the country. That's a fact.
Now, hold on, Matt, because I got to throw this in here because I would be remiss if I did not. But when it comes to they bailed people out, but when it came to the subsection of people who were African Americans across the tracks, they were never included. So when you hear Michigan go, oh my, you got to understand that philanthropic attitude. Now would they help us out? Maybe if they were halfway decent. And give us what they had in their house, if they were throwing stuff out, maybe. But as far as actually giving us, because remember, we're talking to different sets of people here. You didn't get the equalization. You didn't get the philanthropic help that you should you could have gotten to help you where you were because you were not important.
Okay, well, Tracy,
well, you know,
hold on, history, what he's talking.
Hold on, go ahead, Matt.
Huh?
Because I think Matt wanted to go, would say something when I said.
No, you're right. You're right. There's always been a race, and I wasn't going.
So I had to bring that in because I heard Michigan go, oh my. So we have to understand that. Yes, in the past there have been people who have been philanthropic, but you can't say that it came to my way because it didn't.
And I'm talking, yes. I'm talking about the general American spirit. However, and you're right, as far as race goes, there's still race issues. There was slavery. We got rid of slavery.
No. We're just talking about 30 years ago. We're not. You ain't got to go back that far. I gotta clarify the space there. Because yes, people were philanthropic 50 years ago, and they did more, and they bailed America out more, and they helped people out, and they were always helping their neighbor out.
But not black people.
Absolutely not.
Tracy,
remember,
Tracy,
I couldn't use your bathroom.
All right, I understand that.
Tracy, you know why?
Yes, why?
Because of the advent of Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and the NAACP and their whole change.
No.
Now, wait a minute.
Listen,
oh, you had.
Tell the truth.
Because he just started firing.
Tell the truth now.
Yep.
Wait.
Carnegie.
Yeah,
Philadelphia. Hold on, guys. I got to figure out what he's saying because I missed
that. What I'm saying is this, okay? With the advent of Jesse Jackson and his whole idea of labeling everything as race and being the spokesperson for black America, all that money, a bunch of that money flowed through his fingers and through his organization and through
never
the people
anybody.
That were affiliated with him, and it never reached the people it should have. Somebody mentioned Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie was a very, very generous man because he built numerous libraries in rural communities and in black communities and helped build schools and high schools. But Andrew Carnegie was also a eugenist.
But I
just like you mentioned Jesse Jackson, there's as good and bad sides because you know what you said wasn't entirely true. A lot of good things came out of the movements and the things that
That's
Jesse
true.
Jackson and Al Sharpton was doing
right.
early on.
They just, the problem is they just left their
early
car.
On.
They just left their
yeah,
car.
Well,
but I have to throw.
Yeah,
but hold on.
On,
I got. But I also have to say, they may not have been the rich may not have been as philanthropic as they should have been. But then we haven't told the truth about civil rights and the white people that marched with us and died with us and got beat with us for
like
equalization.
Well, right, and you also have
John
to mention
Brown
too about the rich blacks that don't do the things that they should.
And
white
so we got we got to bring them into the equation
in
also.
Well, whites are not supposed to come back in our community and uplift us. That's blacks that has the ability to do so, either financially or even knowledgeable wise.
Well, but I think that's the point, though. If, for instance, if you have a white community, you'll never see them having a town hall meeting saying, we need to support white businesses.
That's true.
Why? Because the businesses that they go to will be white. All right. So now, when you're asking blacks to do something that takes a particular type of consciousness, meaning now we have to double back and make sure we spend our money with our own. We've got to go seek out into cracks and crevices and find those black businesses. This takes a consciousness. That's not natural. The natural thing to do is to run to the store and get that pack of hot dogs.
Well, we control the public schools, Michigan, man. It's blacks that sit on the board of these public schools.
Let me enlighten you a little bit.
The public
that makes white people rich.
What?
Jobs for white people. We know that.
He was bringing up public schools to say that the public schools are supposed to give blacks this type of consciousness. That's not what the purpose of the public schools is.
Right.
The public schools cannot give African kids an African consciousness, political, economic, and social.
Listen, why do I have to have
Now we run here. I don't want to talk about black.
No, that's
see,
not what I said. I want to know why do I have to have an African consciousness? Why can't I just have a consciousness
of
doing the right thing?
Listen, because in the average, I just gave you a practical example. in the mind of an average person that's sitting at home now and need a pack of hot dogs?
Listen, that's not, but that was not the conversation,
the
Michigan.
And get, huh?
Michigan, well, that was not the conversation. Listen,
what he's saying, Tracy, and I agree with him, and that is true, because if blacks was getting the type of education, and I'm not talking about math, science, and so I'm talking about the type of education about maintaining what they should be doing. Well, let's say civic responsibility within their own community. Then a lot of these problems, especially these economic problems that we have, not all of them, but a lot of them, would not exist. So he's right on that.
But what I'm saying is, go ahead, South Carolina.
Listen, if you look in my town, okay, I can pretty much count on one hand the number of black businesses in the town, okay? Now, when I say business, I'm talking about businesses. There's two ladies downtown. One has a dress store, the other has a shoe store. There's another gentleman who has the cobbler shop, okay? There's another fellow, and I'm not counting barber shops, okay? There's about six or seven of them in town here. All right. One of the guys that I'm talking about that has a business, he's got a business that everybody goes and patronizes because they gotta pay their cable bill, their water bill, their light bill and their cell phone bill. They pay them all at that spot. And the other business is the same way. We got two of those in town, they're both black owned. But if you're talking about the convenience stores, okay, which are in the black neighborhoods, they're not owned by black people. Matter of fact, they're not owned by white people either. They're owned by Indians. The hotels, they're owned by Indians, okay? People that came here.
But that was not the point.
Yeah, what's the point to that?
But the point is, you cannot do business with black people if they're not in business.
But see, listen, we were talking about being philanthropic, and I brought in the equation because there was a difference. And the reason why I brought in the difference is, and the points that were made is, those of us who even make it don't go back and pour back into our own communities. But I needed to separate the idea of what America used to be and what America is now, because now that we have integration, there is a disproportionate amount of philanthropic generosity that comes into the black community that does not spread to the people that need it, and the programming that comes out of the federal government through entitlements doesn't get to the best end, because if that be the case, if you have Head Start and you've got that many children going through, we shouldn't have an educational crisis in the inner city or in the impoverished areas.
Go ahead, Alex.
One crystal clear example of the cultural hypocrisy in this country is just look at what the actions of the NRA, how they were, you know, when the Black Panthers were,
yeah,
you know,
they
in their,
okay.
yeah, you know, they came out, they actually supported and to make sure that we were disarmed. But now, you know, but then after we were disarmed, then they go through all these lengths to make sure that other people, you, typically whites, keep their guns. And so it's just these are the type of things that, you know, that we see every day. And so when we hear this doublespeak, I can understand, right, when it's just like all you can do is sigh, because it's like, and people just keep regurgitating nonsense,
right,
about America as if
it's hard.
You're saying the NRA advocated for blacks not having weapons?
Oh yeah, when Huey Lewis was going down the street carrying rifles
during the 60s, they about lost their minds.
Yeah, and it was completely legal, and it was just...
And they made laws to make it illegal so that they could not go down the street and not get hosed.
But it was pushed by the NRA.
Do you have documentation? Can you show me that?
I'll send it to you, Sal.
Huh?
I think what we're saying, and I'll put it like this. The gentleman, I think, in the studio was making reference to back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and I want to go back that far, Tracy. The only reason why I want to go back that far is because I want to look at the men, two men who are known for the foundational of America that we know it. J.D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, and Rockefeller. Now, those two men gave out of their wealth to America, but they gave for the reason that they knew it was going to benefit them. Right. They knew they were going to make money off of the money that they were giving to America, whether it trickled down, like here, for example, electricity. J.P. Morgan was very financially he was heavily in financial backing of Edison, and transforming electricity to be in everyone's home and anyone's business. It didn't matter whether or not you were black and you benefited from it. It didn't matter whether or not you were Italian, white, Jewish, Irish. It didn't matter. He knew he was going to make money off of it. That was the benefit of his.
You got to get to the point.
And what you're saying, brother, is what you're saying in a nutshell is, this is a historical fact. It's not even his opinion or my opinion. Philanthropy has always been political money.
Right.
That's a historical fact. All you got to do is study it.
So going back to what Matt was saying about that, because remember he had brought it up about how the wealth has helped out America over the years, and he was going back to taxes, and that's where we started with this conversation. And I'm saying is what black people never benefited from it as they should have, and that's a problem, and I needed to separate that out because I can't say that people were philanthropic. They were assisting us when they chose to. But as far as making sure they didn't have an agenda on the other end, that's not true.
Yeah. Two things. The other piece that we leave out when you hear statements like what North Carolina say, and most blacks say it because they're assessing the black community. In other words, they're taking a direct look at it and assessing it, what they see with their natural eyes. Okay, he said, okay, there are no black businesses. Now, everybody know that's true. But if you want to assess it to see why there are none, then you have to go back in history. You don't just look at the corner and say there ain't no business here. Now, wait a minute.
Go ahead.
If you look between the years of 1867 and about 1917, this thing we call a functional black community, this was when it was had its greatest momentum. You know why? Because the black business movement, it moved from about 4,000 businesses to about 50,000. Now, when you talk about looking at black business and the state of black business today, you have to infuse that history of how did the momentum of black businesses stop?
All industries are
based off of momentum. If the momentum is broke, then you're going back to square one.
But hold on for South Carolina. But going back to where we came from, going back to being philanthropic, the reason why I brought this in is because of the differences in the people that listen to the program. And so white people need to know, because we're looking at the children and the grandchildren of the 60s. We're not looking at as much as the people that were in their 40s in the 60s. They're mostly old now or dead.
But when you bring in Alex's point about blacks, the last generation, not leaving a legacy or any keys for me to take and turn the store and open up the store.
You got to understand, people can't follow as quickly as we can talk.
Oh, okay.
So you can't change. You can't just slip the subject in there because they can't follow it. They can't figure out what the heck we're talking about. So I've got to separate this out. So you got to know where we're coming from. You're talking to a group of people who have no idea what the whole immigration, segregation, Jim Crow movement was about, because they really weren't a part of it, because you're looking at the children and grandchildren of these people who were not a part of it and were never told the truth of it.
Well, that's why you need to tell them.
Listen to what I'm saying. And so when you talk about philanthropic, when Matt comes in and starts talking about how people were giving money away to bail out America,
We got to tell people, hey, they might have bailed out America, but at that time you didn't consider me American, and so the bailout money never showed up in my neighborhood. They don't comprehend that because, remember, their history and the history that actually happened in America has never been taught in our schools. They don't have Black History Month in the suburbs. They go over Martin Luther King, the Peanut Man, and maybe the Popcorn Man, and that's about it. But as far as really getting into what happened there, they don't. That's why they're watching movies like The Help. You following me with this?
Yeah, but, I mean, that's the obvious. No,
that's obvious to you. But it's not obvious to the people that are listening. You've got a broader audience than the people that are on this phone. And they're coming from different parts of life, and I have come to the resolve that these people were 12, 13 years old during this movement. And it's not
but
like their parents. Hold
on. White people.
We're talking about white people. And black people, too, because black people, your parents shielded us. We knew about Martin Luther King. We might have been 9 years old in the 60s. But as far as really feeling, seeing, and knowing the impact of what was really going on there, and looking at a philanthropic movement that was being pressed at that time, that was pouring into our communities, and how people were treated prior to that, that brings us to our future now and our present now, we need to bring out in the open. Because they don't comprehend it, because no one ever told them that I made the lady who came and cleaned your house use the bathroom who was by the outhouse in the backyard because I didn't want my neighbors to talk about me because they had to use, I didn't want them to talk about the bathroom in my house. They were a nice lady. They made you treat her right. But you don't understand the lady that came to clean your house. They don't know that. So there is two separate Americas that we're trying to merge in 2013. And the problem with the merging of the two bodies in 2013, that no one has told the truth about what has happened in the past on both sides.
Well, Tracy, I think you're trying to merge them, but...
No, listen, you have no. You got to understand. You have no Michigan. Michigan, you have no choice but to merge them because we're going to work every – no, listen to what I'm saying. You only have one America. We have something called integration now. If everything was segregated now, then no, you wouldn't have to be trying to merge people. But the problem with the merger is that it was incomplete. That's why you have a disproportionate amount of African-Americans in prison. That's why we have That's why you have a disproportionate amount of money being made.
Name one institution that we're integrated into right now, whether it's integration. Name one institution.
Listen to what I'm saying. When I go to work, and I look around the room, and there's no, and I'm the only black person inside of the workplace, it makes a difference. How do I understand two different cultures if I've not talked about it? And we have no idea, and they are looking at the television station trying to get it. Law enforcement.
Politics.
We're trying to merge two worlds, and we are being duped by both. We're going even education. How do you
Who's
have a whole
to merge two worlds, Tracy?
Listen, Michigan.
Ooh.
Listen, you when I say integration, you have in my school district, you have black teachers and white teachers teaching kids.
Now, you said we're trying to merge two worlds. Who is trying to merge two worlds?
The society at large. The problem
but,
is,
you know,
we're
not
looking
not
at
that's
they are.
Illusion.
Now, listen,
they're
that's
not.
Your, listen, but you got to cohabitate.
My argument is this, is that, you know, when I put up bridges, some projects I had, my work crew was 80% black. Now that I'm not longer doing that, things have went back to like it was. If blacks want to solve many of the economic problems that they have, they're going to have to position themselves where they can make a difference. They're going to have to compete against those people, those entities, where Tracy, many cases you find yourself as the only one or one or two in the whole bunch.
What I'm saying is, and Cat Girl, you're right, it's about economics. But what I'm saying is, when we are having a discussion here, we live in the United States of America, whether you like it or not. We know everything now is about the economic system, the have and the have-nots,
the middle class. It is more about money and green than it is about color of skin in a lot of cases. Is racism still alive? Yes. Is institutional racism a part of the infrastructure? Yes. Are we trying to erode against it? Absolutely. Have we succeeded? No, we haven't. But we have to be honest about it. But if we're going to have an honest discussion about things, you've got to separate these worlds because you've got to educate people out there. Because we don't always understand why you're so enamored with a black president. What made it such a big deal, even if you don't like what he stands for? People can't comprehend that. I understand it. I just don't subscribe to it. But I understand it. But there are other people looking at us like, why would you go for this? Why is it that every time somebody mentions race, everybody stands up? Why is it that when somebody white kills somebody black, there's an issue, but when there's black on black crime, they don't understand it? That you got to understand there's a question going on in the minds of a lot of Americans out there that are white. They can't comprehend that. I understand it. But I got to live in the world that I'm not watching Roots because I'd hate all white people if I had to have a digest of Roots every day. And we're going to have to learn how to educate one another because the people who we're talking about who are listening right now are not the ones that are enslaving us in our minds. It's the system. And we're going to have to work inside the system so that we can be a part of it and get other people out of it. If not, we're always going to have the disproportionate amount of African-American males going to prison, black people having babies, and everybody going on welfare. That's a problem. Now, that's all I got to say for today. I've used up my 1,500 words for the day, and I'm done. But that's it. And we have a problem here. And so when he talks about philanthropic, yeah, they helped out. But I'm not going to let him go ahead and say they helped out and black people got the brunt of it because they didn't. You know, they didn't get that. You're talking about retirement and people losing their homes. When I see an 80-year-old lady losing her home, no, she don't understand that she got Social Security from her husband's pension. But she wasn't even allowed to invest like that. They didn't come to her house, knock on her door, and ask her to have a 401K. They didn't educate her about that. They didn't even let her be a part of the little group that they had about money. That's my responsibility to speak on our behalf. That's our job. The problem is we're not doing a good job at speaking on behalf of the elderly because right now we're all too greedy looking for ourselves. And as an African-American woman, I care about black folks that's old. And young black folks coming up behind me. That's my responsibility as an African-American woman. But as an American at whole, I care about the future of America because whatever happens to America happens to my community. But, yeah, we need to spell it out because they have no clue what we're talking about. And then they wonder why we do what we do. We need to explain some things, and they need to know so they can have compassion on us when we look stupid. And then they can actually start integrating with us and we can start getting jobs. And that, so when a black man comes in for employment, they'll hire him and not look at him with what they see on television. Because that's not who we are. Obama is not an anomaly. Alex is just like Obama. They just have different ideologies. So when Alex comes in with his dreads, they give him the job because of his mind, not because, you know he's going to be like President Obama. That's not true.
Well, Tristan, I ain't got dreads. I got twists and an afro, you know.
Same thing. It depends on what day it is. But when your hair is locked, we need to understand that because that's where prejudice comes in. We got more prejudice than we got racism. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Tomorrow's open. Oh, no, I won't. I won't be here tomorrow. Jeff will be here tomorrow, y'all. So keep him in line, please. The number is 347-945-5229. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Trace.
I'm done. Kat says it's like a Revolution Network. Yeah. I got to keep on going. I'll see you guys on tomorrow. Mark, thanks coming in. I
always
appreciate
pleasure,
you.
Trace.
We'll see you guys on tomorrow. God bless you.
You've been listening to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends. Listen to Tracy every weekday from noon to 3 on Newstalk 600. Visit